I'm not a racist. I made a terrible, terrible mistake. And I'm here with you today to apologize and to ask for forgiveness for all the people that I've hurt. And I've hurt so many people, so many innocent people. And I've hurt myself. You know, I spoke to a girl that I was fond of, and I don't know why I can never, when I listen to that tape, I don't even know how I could say words like that. I'm not a racist. I love people. I always have. But those words came out of my mouth, I guess. And I'm so
what is up, guys? Hello?
Tarvin, can you hear me?
Okay.
Oh, there goes Tarvin. So, again, good morning, guys. I had myself on mute. I apologize for that. That was Donald Sterling. That was the intro this morning. That the scorekeeper must have used the other day. So let's go ahead and bring Sonny Clark in, and then we'll bring in Tarvin right afterwards. So again, the old mute button gets me once again. Sonny, how are you this morning, my friend?
I'm doing good. Good morning. Yes, I joined in right when Donald Sterling was there, and then it was a little quiet there, and then I heard the intro to Tarvin. So I had a feeling you were on mute, and I was going to log in over, but since you got it back, I'm going to log back out and go as a couch potato and go into the chat room. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing good. I got my coffee here, so I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm pumped up. So, all right, let's bring
We almost had a major catastrophe here as far as coffee is concerned. Yeah, almost a major catastrophe. We thought our coffee breaker was broken. And you want to talk some panic in Sonny's eyes this morning? That's what that was. But we got fixed and everything's fine. So and go ahead and bring in Tarvin. I'm sorry to interrupt his intro there.
Yeah, no, I played the intro once. We're just going to go ahead and we're just going to bring him on. Tarvin, can you hear me?
I can. How's it going, guys?
I'm good. I'm such an idiot. I always have that stupid mute button on, but. But we're all here. Sonny's here with us. We're all here ready to talk some sports. How's everybody having a good morning so far?
Oh, I'm having a great morning. I'm having a great morning. I took the Wunderlich test and still scored better than 98% of the players in the NFL on the Wunderlich. So I feel like I'm at least smart this morning. How are you guys? I took it this morning again when I was dead tired, and I still scored better than 98% of the football players in the NFL.
That's scary.
Wow. Sonny Clark's ready to play quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. That's what it sounds like to me.
I put the post up. I actually had newspaper reporters message me and say, Sonny, is this true? I said, read the thing. I said, should be breaking news. That's what I'm saying. This is what should be happening. Jeez, even reporters can't even read. It's unbelievable.
Got to read the fine print sometimes. So.
But I don't understand. And this is just me. How anybody thinks that Johnny Manziel right now is better than Tim Tebow, it's unbelievable. I don't understand the reasoning. And the main reason is we already have a quarterback who won two national championships in college. Took the Denver Broncos, although if you want to call it lucky, you can call it whatever you want, but took a Denver Broncos team that was in the hole, in the mud, had no chance of making the playoffs, but he made the playoffs and won a playoff game. How anybody wants Johnny Manziel over Tim Tebow, especially if you're Cleveland, and if you're in, and let me just put this on. Again, I'm not saying Tim Tebow should be the starting quarterback for any team in the NFL. There are only about four or five franchises out there that needs a Tim Tebow. And I just, you know, Johnny Manziel, you know, he has made a lifetime career out of that one win against Alabama. So I'm in confusion this morning.
Yeah, I mean, everybody has their opinion. Tarvin, I know when I messaged you, I was like, well, it's official, you know, Sonny has a man crush. But yeah, yep. I mean, all joking aside, is there a valid point to what's, in your opinion, to what Sonny is saying, Tarvin?
Yeah, I mean, the maturity level, too. You look at the maturity level of Tim Tebow coming out of college compared to Johnny Manziel, and I've said it, too, with Sonny, and I've said it a long time. Nobody knew who Johnny Manziel was until he pulled a couple of passes out of his ass against Alabama and threw it up, and some big-ass guy jumps up and catches it. Now he beat the best team, unbeatable, David versus Goliath, and ever since then, he's been doing the same thing. I mean, you look at the defenses he's played against, the top-notch defenses in the SEC, he hasn't done anything except against Alabama. Maybe he just has their number, but Tim Tebow destroyed about every defense he ever played. It didn't matter. He won championships.
In the SEC.
In the SEC.
In the SEC.
He never lost to Florida State. He beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. He beat LSU when it counted. He beat Oklahoma in the championship. He beat Ohio State. I mean, you can just keep going on and on. I mean, I'm not a fan of either one of them, to tell you the truth. But I would take Tim Tebow over Johnny Manziel.
And Johnny Manziel won the Outback Bowl or some obscure bowl, whatever it may be.
The Chick-fil-A Bowl.
Chick-fil-A Bowl, there you go. You know, that one's big. That one's big to put on the notch on your career belt.
Right. Free Chick-fil-A for a year. Awesome. But no, I mean it's true. I mean, I guess when you look at the overall success of both of these guys, it doesn't even come close. You know, I mean the most accomplished thing that Johnny Manziel did, you know, in college was, I mean, it's debatable. I mean, either A, you could talk about the win against Alabama. You could talk about the win over Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl 2 years ago. You know, I mean, it was kind of a big deal, I guess, but.
Not really.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's nothing to write home to
Cotton
Mama
Cotton Bowl
about,
and Chick-fil-A Bowl, two national championships.
And a Heisman Trophy.
And a Heisman.
It doesn't, like I said, it doesn't compare to what Tebow did. However, if you're trying to fight to argue, make an argument for Manziel, a Cotton Bowl and one against Alabama, I mean, that's all he brings to the table. So,
Hey Cuervo. Johnny Manziel had the best, and I quote, the best offensive lineman every year he's been at Texas A&M. I mean, the best, and the best receivers. I mean, the defense is terrible. He had to do a lot. But, man, in that system, I mean, anybody, I think, can do a good job. He's not a very accurate passer. His arm's weak, and he's not a good judge of care. I mean, you can't trust his judgment, seeing what he's done off the field and on the field. He's a rebel, and he plays with no control, and that doesn't translate to the NFL to me. That translates to sit your ass on the bench and wash cars next year is what it's going to be.
However, it does translate to college football, though, Tarvin, if you think about it. In high school, these are the kind of players that, you know, and I'll use an example. Last night I watched a good quarterback play football and take a loss. There are some other reasons why, but Jimmy Coy, who was in the Bears camps, who is playing quarterback for the Texas Revolution this year and quite possibly next year as well, looking at this guy, he when he's out on the football field, he plays with reckless abandonment. He gets out of problems. Manziel, he gets out of problems, tries to find the open guy, throws the ball, tries to use his brain when he's throwing, and I think that could be the difference between Johnny Manziel and like a Jimmy Coy, using his brains. He knows he's got Clinton Solomon, who's a tall guy, long, lanky arms, knows where he has to put the ball compared to the defenders that are on him. That's scouting and knowing what's going out on the football field. And somehow, something tells me that Johnny Manziel doesn't play that way. He plays with the reckless abandonment. I'll throw the ball up and see if my guy can come down instead of, if I place the ball here, my guy will come down with it. And there's two totally different comparisons when you say it like that.
Yep.
And then Cuervo, I'm sorry. All I want to say is you have a guy in Manziel that has the best receivers around him, the best offensive line, and yet he still tries to do everything by himself. He never once stays in the pocket and makes a throw. He's always trying to create and do shit. And in the NFL, when you have that, you're going to find yourself in a wheelchair for the rest of your life. I don't think he can play Cuervo a straight-up game. And Cleveland's not a kind of offense that, to me, you can be real creative. They don't have anybody, really. So you're screwed if you're Johnny Manziel.
And think about that. And think about Griffin. I mean, you know, who took some major hits for running that football the way that he did. And Johnny Manziel, I'm not saying he's any Robert Griffin III, but Robert Griffin III took some major hits and some major abuse, and I wonder if Johnny Manziel would be able to take hits like in the NFL like a Robert Griffin can, just mainly because of his size and mainly because of, you know, what the NFL DBs and defensive linemen do to quarterbacks when they tackle them.
Right, and I mean, if you really think about it, guys, and you look back in the history of all the mobile quarterbacks that we've seen throughout the years, and when you think about guys like, Donovan McNabb, guys like Dante Culpepper, Michael Vick, I mean, these guys don't last in the NFL, and you know. Even with Vic, and I'm not even talking about the dogfighting thing. I'm talking about after dogfighting as a Philadelphia Eagle. How many times did he play 16 games? How many times did he start
exactly.
all 16 games for the Philadelphia Eagles? I'm going to go ahead and say zero. Okay, Dante Culpepper, Minnesota. He had a few good years. All right, he had some outstanding wide receivers. I think that had a lot to do with it. But you know, he didn't last in the NFL either. You know, McNabb is probably the one that you could argue that probably had the most lengthy, most quote-unquote successful career. And then now you got these new guys coming in, guys like Colin Kaepernick, guys like Cam Newton, and then you have, you know, RG3, as we mentioned. Russell Wilson is another one. So, I mean, it's only a matter of time, and I know Russell Wilson just won a Super Bowl. But I'm telling you right now, it's only a matter of time before these guys wear down, just like what happened to RG3. And it's just going to prove the point once again that defenses will catch up to these guys, and a pocket passer will always, you know, outweigh being a mobile quarterback. So I'm going to tell you right now, and this may be going out of the limb. I mean, could I argue that Andrew Luck will win a Super Bowl before one of these mobile guys win the Super Bowl?
That's a good question. That just all depends on what they're going to do with Indianapolis to try to protect him and not lose vital personnel, whether it be offensively and, as we heard, defensively just this past week. But, you know, but when you talk about that kind of guy, when you talk about an Andrew Luck who's that typical, a prototypical pocket passer, only runs when he has to kind of guy, compared to a guy that goes, well, I'll run, or, well, I'll try, and if it doesn't develop in 2 seconds, then I'll run type of quarterback. It's obvious. You got to be able to, I think the not the mobile quarterback, but that traditional pocket passer waiting for receivers to break a route. And that's it's a line as far as receivers are concerned. It's called break a route. If they can break a route, meaning that they're covered for the first 2 to 3 seconds, but find a way to get open in that fourth second, then a quarterback who stays in the pocket for that long will be able to see that break open compared to a mobile quarterback who's running at 2, 2.5 compared to 3 or 4. And the game has changed so much when you take a look at this game. I mean, for crying out loud, I mean, we had to wait until pick number 54 and 55 before the first two running backs were taken. I mean, a full first round and most of the second round was being, already gone before a running back was taken out of there, which means that a lot of teams aren't interested in having it. The traditional running back, that means they need a body to protect the quarterback. And that just goes to show the change of the game to that passing type of quarterback. A running back is now considered just an extra blocker in the backfield.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Tarvin, I mean, I made the statement a minute ago. What's your opinion? You think Andrew Luck will win a Super Bowl before another mobile quarterback does, or am I way off on that?
Well, I mean, it just depends. Mobile quarterbacks are good, but they can't be just a mobile quarterback. They have to be able to be mobile when everything breaks down and create things. Kind of like Russell Wilson to me. He's not a
– yes.
I mean, you know, his last option is to tuck it down and run, but when he does, he's successful with it. Cam Newton, a mobile quarterback, he's learned, hey, you're going to have to throw the ball. You're going to get killed in the NFL. I don't care how damn big you are. He figured it out. He wants to play a long time in it. So, yes, Andrew Luck, I mean, it depends on what you talk about a mobile quarterback. Will Johnny Manziel win a Super Bowl before Andrew Luck? No. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. and here you talk about the Cam Newton. I mean, you talk about these mobile quarterbacks. I mean, I know
the world.
Yeah, the Cam Newtons of the world, these tall, lanky quarterbacks. Manziel is a shrimp. I think I'm taller than him, crying out loud. So that tells you I'm 5'11". I mean, I don't know how this guy – so he's not as big as a Cam Newton. He's not as big as a Robert Griffin III. And these guys are getting blasted. I mean, look at Cam Newton. Injured for 2 years. Now he's taking care of an injury now. Look, Robert Griffin just beat up for that kind of running. And Johnny Manziel, I'm telling you, as soon as one of these 370-pound defensive linemen just sit his fat butt on top of him, never mind hit him, it makes you kind of wonder if he's going to be able to get his little tiny, little scrawny ass up off the ground after he takes a hit like that.
I know.
Do the Browns play the Houston Texans this year? Does anybody know off the top of their head?
I don't know. I can take a look real quick. I'll take a look real quick.
Why you think Johnny's gonna? You think Johnny's gonna own Clowney? Is that what it is?
If it's not Clowney, it's gonna be J.J. Watt. I'll tell you that. I mean, even one of those guys are gonna swallow Manziel up, and people are gonna be like, "Where did Johnny go?"
You know, I played football, guys. I played football, but it wasn't at the college or NFL level. But I was always a smaller guy, weight wise, and not play receiver and running back some. And you know, when a guy double your size, falls on top of you, it kills you.
Oh baby, here it is, guys. I don't know if you found it yet, Sonny. Week 11, November 16th.
Maybe he'll be in the lineup because Bobby Hoyle, oh my gosh, Hoyer or whatever. I mean, good God, I cannot believe that. First of all, if you're the Browns, you make all the right moves, and I'm going to put it out there: Johnny Manziel was the right pick for the Browns. Okay, for the Browns. Okay, he's not the right pick for the Steelers. He's not the right pick for the Saints. He's not the right pick for the Ravens or Panthers. He's the right pick for the Browns. And by the time they get to week 11, that might be something big, you know, because Manziel might be starting at quarterback at that time.
Oh, he will be. He'll be starting week 2 at least.
I predict he's going to start week 1 because they're going to have a love affair, keep the media out there. You know, will Manziel be the starter? Oh, and there's going to be speculation. Will he start? Oh, my gosh, week number 1 against the Titans. Will it be a game that they're going to be able to? It's going to be incredibly crazy when it comes down to that.
Here's another story for you. Will Michael Sam play, and if he does get a tackle, will he go kiss his boyfriend on national TV?
Right.
Oh man, I'm telling you right now. This has got to be the dumbest story of all this week. When you take a look at the news, guys, I'm telling you right now. I don't know who is advising this young man. I read somewhere that he didn't mention the Oprah Winfrey doing the reality show because he thought it would affect his draft position. I mean, come on. I mean, really, did you honestly think that coming out and saying that you were gay a month and a half before the draft wasn't going to affect your draft there? I mean, geez Louise. Hey, I got time. I can do a part-time job. I could probably guide this young man better than whoever's advising him right now, because that's got to be the dumbest thing in the world. Now, he's being smart. I guess he's dropping the idea with Oprah because it's going to be too much of a deal with it. If I read correctly this week as well, I think it was Thursday or Friday, that he's dropped that idea because it's going to be too much of a off-the-field speculation clown, circus effect out there if they do that. So that's probably a good idea for him to drop that, more so because, he's already going to be in a battle anyway. If you look at that defense for St. Louis, okay, he better stand out, gay or not. He better stand out because that defense for the Rams, that's a pretty solid bunch there, Cuervo. I mean, you got Laurinaitis and you got these guys back there. And Jeff Fisher, he isn't going to play. He doesn't care if you're gay. If you can play, you can be gay in St. Louis because Fisher doesn't care about that kind of stuff. So there you go. And Fisher will cut him in a heartbeat if there's any off-the-field problems or too much of a circus-like atmosphere in St. Louis, because Fisher, he's one of those no-nonsense coaches that is really a dinosaur when you think about it, because really, I mean, come on, what has Jeff Fisher done in the last 8 years in the NFL? Nothing. And the simple fact of the matter is he grabbed up on the first coaching job that he could, and then he's snowing the Rams and seeing how long he could snow the Rams as much as he snowed the Tennessee Titans.
Yeah, well, I mean, he makes teams better, Sonny. I mean, let's not fool ourselves here. But I get what you're saying. It's not about just getting better. It's about, actually making things happen.
The end result.
And the end result. And, I mean, it hasn't happened yet. But you think about when he took this team over. I mean, they were, what, a 3-13 squad? I mean, they were terrible. And now they're –
Yep.
You know, they've gotten better every year is what I'm getting at.
Well, no, they haven't. The first year they actually when Sam Bradford was the rookie quarterback, his first year there, that was pretty good. After that, they took the step back. But personnel-wise, I think I might agree with you. I think I agree with you. I think they got better players. Now they need to figure out how to play together and get the wins in St. Louis. And not only that, remember, the Cardinals, 49ers, and the Seahawks, all in the AFC West, NFC West, and I think you can now maybe call it the NFC Best. You got 3 out of 4 teams, and if the Rams want to decide to play this year and be a better team than they were last year, I mean, that could probably be one of the best divisions in football to watch in the NFL this next year.
Yeah, definitely. Tarvin, you're back in. So, I mean, I wanted to go back to Manziel real quick because we were talking about him and things like that. And, you know, Sonny, you mentioned, or one of you two mentioned that, you know, Cleveland is the right team for him. The only thing that, the only problem I have with that is what they've said to him as far as, you know, you need to act like a backup quarterback, you need to do this, you need to be this way. And let me ask you, when you were 21 years old, was anybody changing who you were or changing your personality or just the way you thought? And that question goes to either one of you guys.
No.
Tarvin, go ahead. I know my answer. So go ahead, Tarvin.
Well, people always want to take your weaknesses, and people that really love you and they're close, you can take this advice from things that you struggle with. Maybe you're an asshole sometimes. Maybe you need to change that. That's different. That's not changing who you are. That's just trying to make you a better person. But Johnny Manziel has no backup mentality in his mind. He's not going to be able to sit around and not play and be okay. They didn't bring him to Cleveland to sit on the bench, guys. He's there to make a splash, and if he doesn't, he's out. I mean, it's as simple as that. Johnny cannot handle being on the bench. I'll go ahead and tell you.
Well, and going with that, Johnny Manziel doesn't seem – it's hard to imagine him with a mentor. And that goes with his personality. I mean, you know, if he gets in the Cleveland camp, who, Bobby Hoyer's going to be his mentor?
He wouldn't even go to Peyton Manning's camp. Shit. Is he going to go to Bobby Hoyer's?
Yep. And that was going to be my next point because, I mean, you're sitting there with Bobby Hoyer, and you don't even want to go where they invited you to be to become a better quarterback. And he doesn't even want to show up for that. So this guy goes by the own ringing of his own bell. Now, depending upon what kind of team that you're on, that could be good or bad. Now, with the Cleveland Browns, you have nothing to lose. That's why I think Cleveland might be the right place to be. You know, Cleveland has been improving and improving. We can go back to last year and the year before that. You see a team that is never out of a football game. And that's one of the things. They just need something, that spark, that something that can get them over the hump to where they can be really considered a playoff football team. Now, is Johnny Manziel that guy? I don't know. But it sure isn't going to be Bobby Hoyer. Okay, and you can sit here and talk about all day long about how great Johnny, you know, he was as a Buffalo Bill in his first two games before he got hurt. But guess what? He got hurt. Okay, so not only that, he played well, but he got hurt. So, you know, the whole thing as far as Cleveland is concerned, you know, you've got a pretty good product out on the football field. They've made some great off-season moves, except they let Vince Young go. I don't necessarily know. And he might as well kept him in camp and see if whether or not Vince Young or Hoyer could be in there and be the backup to Johnny Manziel. And I'll tell you right now, there are going to be a lot of pissed-off fans if Johnny Manziel is not the starting quarterback for this football team. But whether or not that – you know, he's got the mentor type of guy. You know, he goes by his own drum. That's Johnny Manziel. And there's nobody on that football team that he can turn to and say, man, I really need a mentor. Who can that be? No, he's got to be the guy. He's got to be the one. So that's the reason why he fits in Cleveland, because of his type of personality. Now, Johnny Manziel, could you imagine Johnny Manziel backing up Tom Brady? I mean,
no.
For crying out loud, first of all, he doesn't want to sit on the bench. And then, you know, you'd hear bitching and moaning coming from this guy. All I want to do is play. I want to get an opportunity. Well, he's going to get the opportunity. And that's why I think Cleveland's the right place for him. You know, Jacksonville would have been another place. I don't think Tennessee would have been a good place for him in reality. They got a different type of credence there. I mean, Tampa Bay, I mean, I'm not saying that he would be great there, but he would be better than, oh, come on, Josh McCown. Okay, he had a good year after he was an English teacher or a history teacher, you know, for crying out loud, and you filled him in. Come on. You got to look at it. If you're going to make moves like that. So for him to go to Cleveland with his attitude, it's the right team. But it's definitely a wrong team for A. Obviously, Denver would never take him. I mean, if you don't want to go to Peyton Manning's camp, you're not going to go to Denver. He's not going to go to New Orleans. He's not going to be able to go to even Indianapolis with Andrew Luck. That caused all kinds of problems. See, in Cleveland, there's no feathers to ruffle as far as the quarterbacks are concerned, or rub someone the wrong way. He can go there and be Johnny Manziel, and no one will really care.
Yeah, I mean that's true, guys. My only thing was just, you know, they're pretty much asking him to, you know, change who he is, and it's just not going to happen. And then when they realize it's not going to happen, then it's going to cause friction between him and the franchise. And you know what? And I'll be the first one to say it. Johnny Manziel will probably last 3 years in Cleveland before he's either out of the league or he's on another football team. That's the reason why I bring it up. Because once he starts to bump heads with front management, front office, and he no longer wants to cooperate with what they're asking him to do, what they're paying him to do, and, well, I'm Johnny Manziel, I'm this, and I told you guys to draft me, and, you know, and that's when it's, you know, it's going to turn into, you know, and I'm trying to think of an example where you have a situation like that where, you know, you brought somebody in or whatever, and then 3 years later they're gone, so... but I really have a feeling that that's what could happen.
Cuervo, yeah, I think his feelings are still hurt because Cleveland waited so long to draft him. I mean, I really do. I think in his mind, I don't know if he's going to be able to get over that. And nobody's talking about that in the media or anything. But I think he's pissed off at Cleveland for passing up and getting somebody else and almost letting him fall out of the first round and before they finally got him. So I'm going to see how that pans out.
Well, that would be about ego, then, in reality.
And there you go. You know, and that's what I'm getting at, guys. You know, Johnny is an ego guy, and the owner's asking him to be the total opposite. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think that, you know, you know what you're getting yourself into. Don't try to change who he is. He is who he is, whether you like it or not. And that's why... when you draft him, you don't draft him for the damn fans. I'm so sick of hearing about people talking about, well, the fans love him. And okay, great. Well, the fans don't help, you know, teams win football games. All right? Help them
unless
make money.
Unless you're in Seattle.
The 12th man, yeah. I mean, it's but, I mean, really? I mean, they only
really,
so
it's the only. It's really, if you think about it, it's the only NFL team that would probably do something quote unquote for the fans more so than anything because of the importance of the 12th man. I think as a franchise, I think Seattle knows the importance of the fans out there more so than any team in the NFL.
But I mean, do you see my point though, guys? Do you see what I'm talking about?
Yep.
Like you. Johnny Manziel is not going to change who he is just because the owner asked him to. He'll sit there and he'll say the right things in front of the media. You know, oh,
absolutely.
I've got to earn my spot and this, like, and this and that. I got to put my work in. I'm gonna be the first one in, the last one out. You know, the same garbage that you hear every other quarterback talk about, and you know, half the time it's not true. But that's what he's gonna put in front of a camera. But I think the reality of the whole situation is that he is going to eventually say, you know what, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, he's going to do everything he can to try and put himself in a better situation because of the way he's been spoiled since he was little, you know, mom and dad having, you know, their wealth and things like that. And then when he got to A&M and he gets a slap on the wrist for violating, you know, violating NCAA rules. I mean, he missed that. Guys, remember, he missed one half against Rice. Do you really think they missed Manziel in that first half of the game? I mean, it's so laughable. And now he's in the big leagues in the NFL. where he's making his own legal money. And, you know, I mean, imagine how much bigger his head's going to get. So I think it's going to – and Cleveland is a very unstable franchise, guys. That's why I think Pittsburgh, New England, you know, teams like that would have been great for him, because – it would have really humbled him, and it would have really shown him, like, look, dude, you're with the big leagues now. This is the way stuff works. If you don't like it, you know, we have no problem releasing you, because, you know, as you know, Sonny, I mean, the salary cap for rookies now is not like it used to be.
Absolutely, and that's a huge part. And for a guy like Johnny Manziel, you know, this is a kind of prototypical. Listen, I've been in many press conferences, okay? And I've also been behind the scenes. And what you're seeing in the press conference, like you just said, the nonsense that you hear in press conferences, have the trust of a team and be able to sit around and listen to these guys talk, okay? You know, they are not believing what they're saying when they're in front of a camera. More so, you get them off camera, get them off the record, and seeing them, you know, lose their mind. I mean, and that happened. And it's not just one game. This every game, okay? It's the blame game when it's the locker room. In front of the camera, it's a team thing, okay? So this is – when you talked about the nonsense of what Johnny Manziel is saying, you can absolutely – positively believe in your mind that Johnny Manziel thinks exactly the opposite of what he's saying in front of that camera, okay? I'm telling you, that's just what you can do, especially with a guy like Johnny Manziel. Now, if you got a Jerry Rice, Tim Brown, you know, veteran guys, some of these guys believe what they say. But these young cats and the Johnny Manziel type of guys is there. I mean, you're right. What you say about him, would it be best for Johnny Manziel to be behind a Tom Brady, behind a Aaron Rodgers, behind a Drew Brees? Absolutely. But here's the thing. Cleveland tried to humble him, not by saying that he is the backup quarterback. Okay, they're trying to humble him, but in the draft they try to do it. Remember, instead of taking Johnny Manziel when they could have originally, they dropped back into the draft, took somebody else, and then another guy. And then they moved up to get him. So basically what they're trying to do is say, hey, listen, we're trying to build a team here, and you're part of that team, and look how you weren't number one as far as that team is concerned. And so by the draft position where they grabbed him up, okay, I think that was actually Cleveland trying to humble them. But look how he came off on it, really in reality, okay? And it wasn't necessarily him. All the media attention was about Johnny Manziel being taken by the Cleveland Browns in the first round. Don't matter about Clowney. That was expected. So no one cares about that. You know, the only other really notable, you know, move in the first round was Jacksonville taking Blake Bortles compared to somebody else. That was really the only real news in the first round, except Cleveland dropping out and then going up and grabbing them. Really, I mean, that's all you got out of the first round in reality, if you think about it.
Yeah, and we had some surprise picks, too. You know what I mean? Well, I don't know what the Miami Dolphins were thinking, but at least they grabbed up the Tennessee Volunteers.
Well,
still, I mean, they could have. Yeah, exactly. I think they had an actual Dolphin running their draft, so
yeah.
Which actually might have worked out, actually, because Dolphins are pretty smart. But, you know, Tarvin, I think another reason, too, is – I think Cleveland knew that if they weren't going to move up to get Manziel, Kansas City with that next pick was going to take him. I mean, that's from what I know, from what I've heard. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think it would have been better for him to wind up behind Alex Smith, you know, under a guy like Andy Reid, who's an established coach, instead of a rookie coach? And that's another thing, too. Manziel's going to a team, guys, with a rookie head coach. It just, to me, this just spells disaster in Cleveland. It's just not going to be good. I mean, it all sounds great right now because we're in the offseason, but God, I mean, Manziel with a rookie head coach.
Everybody's a contender in the offseason.
Well, yeah, because everybody's 0-0, Sonny, so you're right.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Tarvin, don't you think he would have been better off? Maybe he should have been texting Cleveland or Kansas City saying, do everything you can to, you know, not get passed over, and so that way I can go to you guys. Like, should it have been texting the Chiefs instead of the damn Browns?
Yeah, it would be a better fit, of course. But, you know, Kansas City made the playoffs. I mean, Johnny Manziel's storyline, he's going to take a team that hasn't won in millions of years and rebuild, take them to the playoffs. I think it's a better story is Cleveland. You have to remember the movie Draft Day was all about the Cleveland Browns, and so was the real Draft Day, guys. So I think Cleveland better fit for him than Kansas City right now, because really there's no pressure in Cleveland. If he loses, they've always sucked anyway. Why not just, if he wins, though, he's going to be a god.
Yes.
Yeah, I guess, you know, I guess we'll see what happens. But other Browns guys.
Let me ask you a question, Cuervo.
Uh-huh.
Let me ask you a question before you move on to the next subject. You're talking about Kansas City. I mean, you already got, and I don't want to call him a head case, but we also got a guy who already had his feelings hurt after Colin Kaepernick took over for the 49ers. Could you imagine Manziel going in there and getting in the head of Alex Smith? I mean, really, obviously Alex Smith has got problems mentally as far as being able to deal with, you know, you bring in another guy and now all you want to do is replace me? That's what I think about it. That's what I think about Alex Smith. I don't think about Alex Smith as a quarterback like Andrew Luck. You say, yeah, go ahead and bring him in. He ain't going to get my spot. Alex Smith then goes, what do you mean you're going to bring in the quarterback? Aren't I the starting quarterback of this football team? That's how I think about Alex Smith. And mention Johnny Manziel. And, you know, and let's say Kansas City for some reason loses two games in a row. Could you imagine what it would be like in the media in Kansas City if they lose two games and the demand will be for Johnny Manziel? How much would that get in the head of Alex Smith? I mean, you already got passed over, you know, you were, 7-1 when you got injured? Colin Kaepernick comes in, they say, well, you know what, we're going to keep Colin Kaepernick over you. Like, wait, whoa, hold on, weren't we 7-1 before we got injured? Am I a bad quarterback? You see, and I think that kind of stuff would get in the head of Alex Smith. That's why I don't think Kansas City would be the right move for the team, more so, what I like to see Johnny Manziel in the Kansas City Chief uniform. I will tell you, I'd love to see that. I think, not only that, they got the best radio broadcaster in the world. Imagine him calling touchdown with Johnny Manziel. Oh, radio gold. But Alex Smith, mentally, I don't know if Alex Smith could have handled them taking Johnny Manziel. I mean, Cuervo, do you think that mentally Alex Smith is tough enough to take a Johnny Manziel sitting right behind him, you know, foaming at the mouth to take over the starting quarterback position of the Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, you know, I think, Sonny, you know, the only thing we really know about Alex Smith as far as that is what happened in San Francisco. I mean, that's our first impression of how he handles things. I think if it was to happen again, and there's no guarantee, but I think he would have handled it a little bit better because he's been through it before. So I think he might know how to just handle it better behind closed doors, I guess. I'm not saying for sure. However, because of the fact that he's already gone through it once, I just think he would have been able to handle the situation better than he did with the 49ers. So, that's my opinion. I mean, I'm not saying – I don't know for sure if that's how it would have went down, but I think it would have probably been a little smoother than what happened with the Niners.
Wait.
So.
Well, he was – remember, I mean, this guy was drafted in 2005. I mean, he didn't really see the field until, 2011, 2012? I mean, so really, I mean, in and out of the lineup, you know, back and forth, I don't know. That would be – but, man, I think I like what you said there, Cuervo. Yeah, Kansas City, man, if they had quarterback problems, I'd like to see that. I mean, they're not the best team in the NFL, but they're pretty damn good. because sometimes if you look at some quarterbacks and they go into the first round, they go to the awful teams, you know, to try to create parity within the NFL. I just wonder what Sam Bradford would do on a good football team, you know. More so than the Rams, and they're not great. You see your quarterbacks that fall, you know, that had such a great, looking at their stock, and then they just don't do any good. Blaine Gabbert is one of them out of Missouri. I mean, I thought this guy was that prototypical NFL quarterback that was going to be a monster, but he ends up on the Jacksonville Jaguars where they don't seem to care about winning, and offensive line is non-existent. It just makes you kind of wonder what a good football player that was touted to be really good in the NFL, if they actually were on a good football team and actually could play behind a team that, you know, that is successful.
Well, I mean, you always got to point to the Aaron Rodgers situation when he got drafted by the Green Bay Packers. And I mean, Brett Favre was still had, a couple of years under his belt. As we all know, I mean, that happened in 2005 as well. It was the same year. Everybody thought Rodgers might have been the first pick and go to San Francisco, but they took Alex Smith. And that's what happened. I mean, you see how it could work out for you. But again, that's because Green Bay, and it leaves a bad taste in my mouth to say it, but I'm going to say it. Green Bay is a well-run organization. It is.
Absolutely.
So for them to be able to pull that off, have a legendary quarterback in Brett Favre and then bring in a young guy in Aaron Rodgers to back him up, I mean, you have to have the right franchise to be able to do that. And that's why, no disrespect to the Browns, but I mean, it's not gonna be a good situation for Manziel. Had he gone to Pittsburgh, backed up Ben Roethlisberger, had he gone to New Orleans to maybe back up Drew Brees or something like that. And I hate to say this, and I know you're gonna love it, Sonny, but even Tony Romo in Dallas. I mean,
yes,
that's better. That's a better situation than Cleveland, guys. I mean, let's be real here. So, I mean, it's just all about the franchise, how they're ran, and that'll tell you everything you need to know about being able to handle certain situations. And
think about the fact of what you're talking about as far as a quarterback being able to sit back and learn. If you take away from Aaron Rodgers, can you name the last quarterback that actually spent more than 2 or 3 years? I know I can. That was actually a good quarterback who actually sat for a while and learned, and that was Steve McNair. Back in 95 when he was drafted, he didn't see the field until 99. Okay? I mean, those were long years for Steve McNair. He had a good NFL career. I mean, at one point he was touted to be one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. He never lived up to that tout. But he at least still had that, had that going on with him. That's the last quarter. I mean, so we go back to, so close to 13 years, think about Aaron Rodgers. It's not 13 years. It's probably around about 7 or 8. But I mean, now these guys, they're throwing them in the lineup and getting them in there because they want to win. Teams want to win. So that's another reason why I wonder how long it's going to be before we actually see Johnny Manziel as the starting quarterback for that football team.
And if we ever do, I mean, Brian Hoyer's he's injured, isn't he, guys? So he'll probably get
an opportunity
pretty quick.
Coming off an injury, he got hurt, I think, in game number 2 with the Buffalo Bills last year, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so I mean, I don't know. Well, I guess the Johnny Cleveland saga continues, guys. That's all I can tell you. But
I love it.
Other Browns news though. Sonny, with the expected suspension of Josh Gordon, the Browns, they turn around and they sign a couple of guys that you and I both know because of our favorite teams. Earl Bennett from the Chicago Bears moves over to Cleveland, and then one of your favorite receivers, Sonny, Miles Bad Hammy Austin, signs with the Cleveland Browns. So, I mean, Does that, I mean, what do the Browns know
and
about?
And if anybody comes up with that nickname before, hey, I'm going to tell you, by week number three, he's going to have a bad hammy up there. I'm telling you right now. I don't know. And I'll put this one out to Tarvin. Out of all the people that got paid the amount of money, I have never seen anybody go soft immediately after signing a contract.
That's usually when they go soft, isn't it?
Yeah, Miles Austin. Miles Bad Hammy Austin. I've never seen anything like it. And not only that, but you think about Miles Austin. This guy was a difference maker before he signed that contract. This guy, I'm telling you right now, him and Tony Romo, hey, man, they had that love affair. They were patting each other on the butt a lot until he signed that contract, boy. I don't know. But Miles Austin in Cleveland, I think, you know, if he can stay healthy, but, I predict by week number three or earlier that he gets a bad hammy and he's not in the lineup.
Especially in the cold weather, Sonny.
Exactly. That's exactly where I was going with it, because when you look at Cleveland and the weather issues, I mean, he's playing nice in, you know, Cowboy Stadium, nice warm, you know, area, which is good for bad hammies in reality. Cold weather is not good for bad hammies. And not only that, bad hammies, and then he's going to get the what's the injury with the four muscles together? The quad. His quad's going to go too. So you got the hammy and the quads all put in that area. Hammy and quads are going to be a problem for him up in Cleveland. Guaranteed.
Bad hammy, heavy pockets Austin. That's his nickname.
That's right.
any more Cleveland Browns talk, guys, before we get into some NBA talk?
I have to ask, because I heard just, you know, this has been a really busy week for me and being able to dive into sports as much as I want to. What's going on regarding, I mean, I'm hearing that there's an opportunity for him being, Josh Gordon, for being suspended. What's going on with that? Why is he being suspended? What's the news on that?
Marijuana.
He failed a second marijuana test. Funny. Yeah, so Mary Jane got to him again, and the NFL rule is, now correct me if I'm wrong, Tarvin, it's one full season suspension, is it not, for second offense?
Yeah, I think it is. That's what they're talking about, but they're also looking at raising, you know, the standards. I mean, it's too tough, really, for the NFL. I mean, they need to be able to smoke more weed, so the players' union is going to make it to where they can smoke more weed now and not get in trouble.
That's because of some states legalizing it. It's such a stupid. That is so stupid. Just because the states legalize it, it should be, you know, legal in the NFL. I'm not buying that crap. I mean, you look at it and say what you want. The jokes are that if you're on marijuana, you're not going to get into a car accident because you're only really going 10 miles an hour. Okay? I don't even want to hear that. It does alter the body. Oh, it doesn't alter the body, my ass. It surely does. And, you know, say whatever you want about it. It's not good for you. I mean, if you got to toke it, it can't be good for you. I'm all for people who need it for pain and stuff like that, but NFL players need marijuana like, you know, I need another 50 pounds.
Oh, boy. All right. So, and that was what I was going to ask, too, is, you know, what about the Seahawks and the Broncos? I mean, you know, with those two states legalizing it, do they still get suspended? Or, I mean, I really don't know. I mean,
NFL rule bans it. It trumps the law.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're allowed to smoke it in that state, it doesn't mean that you can smoke it in the NFL. It's banned substance on the NFL. And I'll tell you right now, if they change that, you know, I think that's just crap. You know, come on, keep your guys healthy. And you just can't be healthy doing that in reality. You know, forget the fact of what it does to you mentally. The smoking portion of it, you know, come on. I mean, just because it's marijuana compared to tobacco, what's the difference? You're still inhaling smoke. It's not good for your body. It's not good. I mean, granted, what are they going to do? Are they going to start looking at fat football players saying you can't eat this. No, but in reality, it's just a banned substance. Not good. It's been legal for years for a reason. So I think they need to keep it. But I have been hearing grumblings that they're trying to change that, and that is coming from the Players Association there, Cuervo.
Yeah, I mean, but I think the NFL should not change just because of state laws. I mean, to me, I think that's kind of silly, you know what I mean? But
what's going to happen with all these drug dealers, guys? What's going to happen with the weed dealer? I mean, if everybody can go buy it, you know, and be legal, the hell, they're going to die, right?
Well, Sam Hurd's in jail, so no one's smoking it anymore.
No, see, well, Sam Hurd was on a whole nother level, Sonny. I mean, he wasn't, you know, little bags of marijuana here and there. Now, this guy, I mean, they called him Metric Ton, you know, and there was a reason for it. So, I mean, but, I mean, yeah, and this guy was on a whole nother level. I mean, he had Colombian connections,
man.
If you get my drift.
That's awful.
So.
God, that's awful. I'm telling you right now, today, I don't know, I slept well last night. No one's not a target for me. Any stupid, I don't care if I know them personally, I'm calling them out on, you know, as far as athletics are concerned. I'm calling them out if I like them or not. Oh, man. Hey, so watch out, anybody. Don't do anything stupid today within the next week because I'm going to be on air a lot. So don't do anything stupid. I'm going to call you out.
Well, so there you go.
Just Michael
be Sams. Careful.
Michael Sams. Oh, I do want to do a reality show. I thought it would affect my draft position. Give me a break, you dummy. God.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Hey, Sonny, on this show, and I don't know, you know, this was a long time ago when we talked. Remember you said some people would be coming out, and here it is, Michael Sam doing it. But at that time, we talked about how the locker room would accept Michael Sam. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And you know, I don't care what they say on TV, guys, this locker room is not going to be supportive on that field. I don't know if y'all think that, if I'm wrong, but I just don't think. You know, everybody said Sam dropped because he wasn't that good. That's bullshit. They dropped because the NFL wasn't ready for a gay player.
The ACC Defensive Player of the Year dropping to where he dropped? SCC Defensive Player. Come on. That guy's a first-round draft pick. I'm sorry, he is. I mean, and you want to talk about a major hit. I mean, and I'm going to tell you also, I've been in many a locker room. This is not going to go over well. It's not going to get out. They are going to close the locker room for the Rams. No one's going to be unless you're really, 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 really trusted to be in that locker room. You're not going to be in there. Okay, that's just the way it's going to be because Michael Sam is going to have problems in that locker room, and they won't announce it. It won't get press. It won't get leaked. But there's going to be a problem in that locker room, and it's going to be a division. And you know,
I don't think he makes a team. I don't even think he makes a team.
I don't know how the Defensive Player of the Year doesn't make that football team, even though they're loaded.
They're loaded,
but I don't know how that guy's got some talent. I mean, I don't know. It just all depends upon Fisher and his mentality. Has he gone nuts? That's all you got to ask. Is Fisher gone nuts? And if he's gone nuts, then they'll release him. If he's gone nuts, they'll release him. I don't think that's a good talent there. And that's where coaching is going to come in line there. If they could keep that locker room straight, forget that this guy is gay, forget the guy who kisses guys, and the mentality of these stupid football players. That's why I took the Wunderlich this morning. Uh-huh. I just want to make sure he's smarter than most of them. How they say when you're about ready to get Alzheimer's, you should do crossword puzzles. I do the Wunderlich test, okay, just to make sure my brain is there. All right. So, and the mentality of these young kids who are so stupid. stupid that they, you know, they don't have a sensitive bone in their body or think that outside of their own little world, if you're different, then you are different and we're going to let you know that you're different. Yeah, it's just going to be an awful situation. I would love to be the fly on the wall in that locker room in St. Louis and not only that, after he misses a play or he gets burnt, how they'll be, yeah, Michael said, you know, he was too worried about his boyfriend or getting it up the butt instead of playing defense. It's going to come out. I guarantee that's the kind of thing that's going to happen in that locker room, because the maturity of an NFL football player at the age of 22, they've got the maturity of a 13-year-old at best.
Get it up the butt. Funny.
Well, he's so worried. He was worried about taking it up the butt instead of playing defense. You know, that's what a 13-year-old would say, right? I mean, that's what I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. It's a reality of it. It's not the fact that I believe it, because that's just stupid, but the mentality of these stupid football – I'm tired of hearing about how smart they are, okay? We hear that all the time. Oh, you know, they got athletic ability, and that's what they're getting paid for. I mean, they're college graduates. College graduate, my butt, if they can't be smarter than Sonny Clark – They're not a college graduate. They got a piece of paper on the wall. Now,
hey,
granted,
Sonny,
that does give you some pull.
Hey, Sonny, on the on the shower situation, you know, a lot of people come out and said, you're a homophobe if you don't – I mean, if you think he's looking at you and all this stuff. But let's see. Us three are in the locker room after the game, right? Me, you, and Cuervo, and a girl walks in without any clothes on in the shower. What are we going to do? No, seriously, serious question.
Hey, Cuervo, he is bringing it down to a level that makes sense, more so than, oh, these guys are mature enough not to look at the naked girl walk in. Gay or not.
Okay.
If he looks
really
at me
know
close
what
enough,
do?
He needs...
I mean, I'm
really
talking about like on a 10 scale, a 5 walks in, just a 5, not a 8 or 9. She walks in, she looks pretty good, no clothes on. I'm going to sit around, I'm going to turn around and watch her take a shower. I mean, I'm just honest with you. I'm not a pervert, I'm not a anything.
Yeah, you are,
but
that's okay.
Do.
All men are perverts.
Exactly, Sonny. Exactly. Michael Sam's a man.
It don't matter.
Hormones.
Listen, that is, hey, Cuervo, you will never hear mm-hmm. that argument on ESPN. And you want to know why? Okay, and I'm going to tell you the reason why. It's because that makes sense. Okay, we can sit here and talk about all the political correct, and I'm going to tell you right now, Tarvin, as funny as that sounds, that is so true.
Hello.
I mean, if you now, granted, if Michael Sims is looking at me in the shower thinking he wants a little bit of that, he needs to get his eyes checked. Now, take away from that. Okay, you're going to have more guys. You're going to have more athletic guys in there, and where he would be wanting to look at it. So you know that it's such a valid point that Tarvin makes. But here's the reason why you'll never hear it on ESPN. Okay, it's not politically correct. Okay, but that's
it makes people uncomfortable. And it makes people uncomfortable when you talk about it. So what I would do if that situation ever happened to me. I mean, I'm not going to be rude. I'm going to, you know, introduce myself. I'm going to shake her hand. Talk about the first thing that pops up.
Talk about the first thing that pops up. That's good.
I'm going to go grab her soap and ask her if I can bathe her, you know.
You can turn this into a sponge bath.
Well, oh, man, could you imagine if Stephen A. Smith talking like this up on the show? You know he talks like this off air. But can
Sonny,
you imagine
Sonny,
he
question,
actually
Sonny.
Puts it out there?
Serious question, Sonny. What if women came to the NFL? Would they have the showers be shared? I mean, could they set up a new shower or facility for Michael Sam? I mean, would they do that? Because if women came in, they would.
Yeah, I think that'd be... That would be taking it a little too far.
I don't, but you know, it does drum it up. I mean, I get what he's saying, politically correct or not, you know, which is not here. You know, these are valid points that no one wants to talk about, and the reason why it offends people. You know, I'm not against gay people playing football. I don't give a rat's fat ass. I want to see what happens out on the football field. Okay, but we're talking about the guys that are in the locker room that have to deal with it, and they're just not smart enough to deal with it. They don't have the maturity to deal with it. And that's the problem in the locker room. It's not the fact that it should be politically correct. Of course it should be. The guy should be able to go out and play football on a daily basis and not have to worry about his sexuality. It's the players. It has nothing to do with the franchise. It has nothing to do with the coaches. Well, maybe to a certain extent to the coaches. But the simple fact of the matter is these guys are not playing NFL football because they're Harvard graduates, okay? They're playing because they can play a game, and their athletic ability trumps their sophisticated education, and it's completely trumped. If you can run a 4.3, okay, I don't give a shit who you are. You could be the retarded citizen on the corner, and they would pay him because that's what the NFL is. And the simple fact of the matter is, that's the way it is. If you can play, it don't matter how smart you are.
Right. No, good point. I mean,
great stuff.
And the maturity level of these guys is as much as a, you know, 12, 13-year-old guy. You should hear the arguments I've heard in locker rooms. I'm sitting here thinking, man, I just went back to middle school somehow. I got into a time warp. And I'm listening to some of the things that happen in locker room, and I feel like I'm back in middle school.
And that's why the bullying thing we talked about with Miami, that happens in all locker rooms. Maybe they're not that extent. Maybe they're stronger,
one.
But they're too stupid not to bully people. It takes an idiot to bully people.
Exactly. That's why it happens a lot. That's why it happens on every football team, because they got a bunch of idiots on their football team, and all they're worried about is getting their press and getting their film and being on ESPN highlights. They don't care about playing football. I mean, look at offensive linemen. Do we ever talk about offensive linemen? Hardly ever, okay? And those are usually the ones that are calm and everything else, but we got problems on the offensive line in Miami. So we know it extends to even further than the superstars on the football team.
Yeah, well, I mean, offensive linemen, they're not the stars of the team, Sonny. That's what it is.
Yep.
So you don't really
talk about them, but they're not exactly. But that also goes to show they're not beneath being stupid either, and they're known as some of the smartest ones on the team. So they're not beyond going to you know, elementary behavior in a locker room, you know. So, you know, when you think about the smartest guys on the team, you think about quarterback, and this is just me, quarterback, then offensive linemen. They're the smartest guys on the team because they got different assignments, more so than running four or five different routes that are variables of three or four different routes. So, you know, I think when you think smart, you think offensive linemen, and then, you know, you got the offensive linemen in Miami making an idiot of stuff. They're not beneath being – everybody can go to that stupid moment, I think, but in an NFL locker room it happens 95% more than in regular businesses because they allow it to happen.
Yeah, and it comes down to tolerance. I mean, what is the tolerance level – you know, based on your environment. And in professional sports and football, I mean, you know, it's not as tolerable. It's not as accepted. Like, what if this was the NBA, guys? I mean, I know we've seen it with Jason Collins, but I'm talking about, and I'm just going to throw this scenario out there. Of course, I'm not starting a rumor. I don't know anything to be a fact. But let's say I'm going to use Andrew Wiggins, okay? Phenomenal talent out of Kansas, going to the NBA tomorrow, guys. He has a press conference, says, I'm gay. how do you think the NBA handles this compared to the NFL? So, who, you know, I mean, what do you guys think?
The difference is Jason Collins played in the NBA for a long time, and he's older. And I think they was like, well, he's been gay forever, and nothing's happened. But this kid coming out of college, I don't think it would go over well, honestly, in the NBA. I think it would be worse than in the NFL.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. I'm using a younger guy as an example. So, Sonny, what's your thought?
Well, I was actually thinking that it would be more acceptable on an NBA level, and the reason why there are less people on a team. I mean, geez, how many? 54 on a squad, right? On an NFL team, 54, 53, something like that. I forget the number. Compared to what, 15? In an NBA locker room? You have an opportunity for it to be a better situation just because of the odds of stupidity in the room. There's less people in the room, so you got an opportunity to educate them faster, you know, with 15 guys on the team compared to 54 or 53 or whatever the number is. So I would think that they would at least have a better shot of being more mature or being able to handle it a little bit more. So I don't know. When you think about NFL, you think about gladiators. When you think about the NBA, you don't think gladiator. You think sophisticated athleticism. That's the way I kind of look at it. I see the difference. You don't have to worry about getting tackled and being manly men by tackling someone. I mean. So more so in the NBA, you don't have that kind of physicality out on the football field or on the basketball court compared to the football field.
Honey, and let me ask you this: what if you're being posted up by a guy that likes it a little more than he should? Like, I know it sounds funny, but I'm being for real. What if you're backing in, and the guy's liking it a little more than he should? Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you're talking about in the NBA where it may not be as. All right, I'm gonna stop. Sonny's gonna lose his breath.
Sonny spit up his coffee.
I think he did. I think I made him.
Oh my God! Thanks for the image. Oh my God!
Hey, Tarvin, they might call a foul, but there's no hand contact. If you know what I mean. I mean, I'm just saying.
Oh man!
Oh Jesus! That's oh God!
How would the ref call the foul though? What would he say?
Oh my God!
Leaning in or what?
Yeah, giving them
business.
Oh my God,
that's
like
the funniest
like
thing I've ever heard
in football.
Yeah,
I mean, giving them the business.
You're trying to kill me over here, Cuervo. That's the funniest thing I think I've heard in about 3 months. Oh my God!
What? You know, I tried to do my best, honey, to make everyone's day. So apparently, I've made your day.
Oh my God!
That
was great.
Well, I mean, it's true.
They say the funniest things in the world have truth to it. That's what they say. And yeah, it's just the hoisting up. Oh God. That's wonderful.
it's happening again. Hey, Tarvin. So let's talk about these conference matchups, man. We have Miami, Indiana today, and then Oklahoma City, San Antonio tomorrow. I mean, in your opinion, just off the top of your head, first instinct: are we going to see a rematch of last year? Are we going to see a rematch from 2 years ago? Or are we going to see a team for the first time in a long time make the NBA Finals?
I think you're going to have Indiana OKC in the finals, guys.
So we're going to have the Pacers who haven't made it in what, 12 years, 13 years, they're going to make it back to the finals. Sonny, I mean, it's going to be – I mean, you look at the way Indiana's played, I just don't see – I could see this maybe going five games and the Pacers will be done. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, their inconsistency, okay, in the playoffs, okay, that's their Achilles heel. I mean, and then you take the last, you know, month of the season for the Indiana Pacers, you know, forget about what they did earlier in the year. That, come on, really, in reality, that's irrelevant. It's how you're playing when it comes to playoff time. And you look at Indiana, they haven't been consistent from the last month of the season into these playoffs. Look at the Heat. All they're doing is winning games. All they're doing is closing out games in four or five, you know. You look at what's going on now. Granted, should they? Of course they should. I mean, the Miami Heat, you know, are a team when you look at what they do on a daily basis as a team, okay? They are the kind of team that wants to get in there and get in it quick. So where they do not have to deal with a bunch of nonsense, because let's be honest, the quicker they finish off a team, and you can say what you want, okay? Dwayne Wade, he's getting old. They don't need to be in, you know, any long drawn out seven games. I mean, they took care of Charlotte, you know, in four games to nothing. Why? Because they're just an overpowering better team, and they didn't let Charlotte go in there and try to do anything against them in order to get there. And the Nets, they got one game, and they were lucky to get that game, by the way. So the simple fact of the matter is, when you look at what's going on, as far as teams are concerned, the Miami Heat, to this point, have played only nine games in these playoffs, okay? The Pacers, you know, last round took the Wizards 4-2, okay? They played six games just in that series in round number two, and when you look at what they did in the first round, they went five games with the Bulls. Okay. Now, granted, they handled the Bulls, but when they moved up against talent, it took them a lot longer. Miami, if supposedly if they move up, they played nine games, one game more than if they swept both rounds. You know, that's they're well rested. They got talent, and you know, the Pacers. You know, as much as I would love to see it, don't get me wrong. I don't want anybody to think in my heart, I'm hoping that the Indiana Pacers can figure out a way to beat the Heat, but I just don't see how they're going to be able, just like you, Cuervo, I just don't see how it's going to happen.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think when you were talking about the Pacers, you might have, because you mentioned the Bulls, the Wizards beat the Bulls in five games. Indiana, if you remember, Sonny, they went seven games with the Atlanta Hawks. All right, your Atlanta Hawks.
That's what I meant. Yeah. They went seven with Atlanta, yeah. And then they, you know, geez Louise, they got to be tired too.
It's a matchup issue, guys.
You compare 13 games to the nine that the Miami Heat have played. Indiana's almost played a whole series more than the Miami Heat have. And on top of that, oh, by the way, they have the best player in the NBA in LeBron James. So, I mean... I just think Indiana's. I'm gonna call before the season even starts. They're done. I think Miami wins in five, guys. I mean, I just don't see. As much as we would love to see the Miami get dethroned, and it's not gonna happen this round. If it's gonna happen, it'll be in the finals. You know, against either the Thunder or the Spurs. So, but the first game today is today, guys, at 3:30 Eastern, 2:30 Central. So. That'll be it's going to be a good series.
What's the matchup you're looking at, Tarvin? That was what you said. It's all about matchups. What are you looking at? Is it outside Dwayne Wade and Bosch and outside of LeBron James? Are you talking about the other two spots on the? And I'm not criticizing. I'm asking. I mean, yeah. I don't know the other two on the outside. What's the matchup that you're looking at?
The matchup to me is Miami hates to be bullied. And Miami cannot stand
true.
To play physical. And Hibbert, this is the one series where Hibbert's going to really matter, guys. He's going to he's going to be beating the hell out of people down low. Miami, if you notice, they shoot threes, they get some offensive rebounds sometimes, and they get going. Miami or Indiana's job with their size is going to be to stop that, and they're going to, when LeBron James comes to the hole, he's going to get beaten down. I mean, they're going to try to intimidate LeBron if they can. I don't think they can, but Indiana plays their best basketball when they see Miami coming to the game. I mean, I'm just telling you, you can see it when their energy, you watch today, look at the energy level on that court today compared to all other series. Some teams cannot play for some reason. Maybe they're not mature enough to go out and understand it, but you're going to see a dogfight in this series. And I think Indiana, all that smoke screen you saw in the previous series, I think that's what they are, smoke screens. It's going to be a different series. You can't judge this series by what you've seen so far in the last two series.
I was clearing my throat. I was going on a coughing jag. second of all, yeah, I agree what you're talking about. The only thing when I look at that series, as far as what goes on, Indiana has the occasion to drop the ball, and that's where I look at the Heat. And even though the matchups might not work, remember, I mean, the Heat, they finished. I mean, geez Louise, I mean, even against teams that were good, they had the better record. And not only that, when they won those games, they won them well. I think it might be the maturity, how they realize the matchup. I mean, here's what I think, and maybe it's as elementary as I think it is. You know, if I'm sitting here thinking about it, I mean, you know, the head coach of the Miami Heat are right there. So I think they've got that part figured out. But one of the things, I mean, if Miami is going to have to depend upon what they live and die by in order to win basketball games, the Miami Heat, on the other hand, if for some reason LeBron's not playing well, I mean, they got 3 to 4 other options to go to on that basketball team. When one of the guys for Indiana is not playing well, it affects the whole squad. More so than if LeBron's not playing well or Wade's not playing well or Bosch is not playing well, they can overcome that. When I look at Indiana, if one of the superstars isn't playing well, they don't have a snowball chance in hell in winning the game, at least from what I've seen. And now, granted, I've only watched when the news started coming up that Indiana is not playing well. So when I look at it that way, you know, the consistency of play, even against good teams, I think Miami has it. But you, one thing you are right about, Tarvin, is if Indiana gets in that groove and they start playing, they might have a fight on their hands. But they can't. But out of all the teams affording to drop the ball and not giving 100% from everybody out on the basketball court, I think if you're Indiana, you better hope that doesn't happen for you.
Ryan, did we lose Tarvin? Let me check and see if we lost Tarvin.
I'm here.
Did we lose? No, we did not lose Tarvin.
He's here.
Okay. So, it's all good. It's all good points, guys. To me, I think we could talk about matchups. We could talk about maturity levels. We could talk about getting bullied around. To me, in my opinion, at this point of the playoffs, when you're in the conference finals, it's going to come down to, you know, guys that can make shots in key situations, clutch players, and overall talent. And aside from Paul George, and that's a maybe, guys, I really don't see a guy that can make a key bucket for the Pacers. I mean, you could say Hibbert all you want, but this guy's been known to disappear in games that, you know, are really important. And, I mean, every game is going to be critical in this series because, I mean, like I said, I could easily see the Heat win this thing in 4 or 5. So, I mean, the question for me becomes, you know, who's going to be the guy that hits a key shot in a game when Indiana really needs it? And I mean, I know, like I said, I mean, if Paul George is going to be double-teamed, who's going to be that guy that steps in and makes a big shot?
So I think that I think that's what I look for. So I don't know if you guys agree with that or agree to disagree, but that's what I'm looking for.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, everybody's going to be looking at something different going into the playoffs, and you know the Miami Heat, whether or not they're going to continue. Yeah, what are they on the verge of a three-peat again? Or no? Wait, I'm trying to think here.
They're on the verge of trying to three-peat.
Yeah, they've won two in a row, so they're going for the three-peat. I think in reality, if I look at all the teams that are still remaining in the playoffs, the only team I think really has a true shot beating Miami is Oklahoma City. And I picked them only because just regular basketball play, as far as what the San Antonio Spurs play, is not going to be able to beat Miami. Miami is going to go outside of how you play basketball on a regular basis. Regular season, the San Antonio Spurs, they're going to always have that good record by playing fundamental basketball, but when it comes to the playoffs and when it comes to the championship, it's about stars. And I think that's another huge thing when you look at these, when you look at the games that are happening, the Miami Heat taking on Indiana, who are the stars? Well, granted, the stars that are in Miami are one of the best basketball players possibly to step out on the court in LeBron. And on the other side, even though you have Tim Duncan, you got Tim Duncan, he's a star, but he's a lot older. And right now, obviously, who's the better basketball player? Is it Tim Duncan, or is it going to go on the other side and Kevin Durant? I mean, so I look at star quality in these type of games. You can play the fundamentals of basketball on the basketball court, but when it gets to this point in the playoffs where it's the conference finals, it's about stars and what they do at that point. So you need to see your stars step up in this point. So that means when you take a look at the other side on Indiana, you got to be able to get it from your stars. And when you got stars that are known to drop the ball at heated or important times, more so than when you look on the other side in Miami, they've got it going on. San Antonio, really, I mean, the team that they have the talent is aging, and whether or not they can keep up with it. But OKC with Westbrook and, you know, Durant, even though sometimes they don't play well together, that's going to be about star quality. So that's why I think both of those, Miami and Oklahoma City, end up in the championship. I don't know. Tarvin, what are you looking at?
I look at stars too, guys. I mean, I look at stars. And when I look at, you know, OKC, that's why I think they beat San Antonio. I just think they have too much talent and too much athleticism.
Yep.
San Antonio is a good fundamental team. That'll get them a couple of wins in this series. But at the end of the day, you're not going to stop Kevin Durant and Westbrook if they're on. So I like them. But Indiana is not – I mean, I know you have LeBron James, the best player in the world. But if you put the five against Indiana against the five of Miami, it's not even close. I think Indiana is just a better all-around team. And George and West and these guys, they're mean guys. They play – so I'm interested to see if they can punk LeBron James. I think they can.
Right.
So let me ask you a question, Tarvin. Out of the three teams, Indiana, San Antonio, and OKC, who do you think has the better shot of beating Miami?
OKC.
I agree.
Yeah, I think I agree as well. I think we're all with it.
Yep.
I just think it's a matchup, guys. You have to look at matchups. And if you know, you don't ever hear anything about Miami anymore. They're not being pumped up. It's all about OKC now. So I don't know if they understand that maybe they're going to lose this game and promote Kevin Durant. I don't know, but I'm just telling you, I'm not big on Miami in this series. And, hey, I've been wrong a lot so far, so you can't trust everything I say when the NBA.
Oh, Tarvin, geez Louise. If we were right 100% of the time, we'd be on ESPN if that happened. So
No. Because every one of those guys sucks just about to do that. We actually know what we're talking about.
I just don't understand how these so-called experts can be so wrong all the time. And when you listen to our shows consistently, I mean, we're more right than they are. I mean, so I don't know what it takes to be an analyst or anything, but geez Louise, makes you wonder.
Yeah, I'd be rich if I knew 100% things that would happen, because I would just bet on it. Like, honestly, I would just bet on it.
Forget ESPN. Yeah, but that's the good thing about it. That's why I listen to Block Talk Radio. There's certain shows I'll sit and listen to that have good quality shows, you know, and listen to them. There's only four of them. I listen to one for entertainment, three for information. And, you know, as far as sports is concerned, I'd rather listen to those guys more so than ESPN, you know. But let's be honest, ESPN really has a stranglehold on every sport that's out there because of, you know, let's be honest, they don't call them the mothership for nothing. I mean, you know, they got that influence. So there you go.
Absolutely. So, all right, guys. So out in Golden State, Mark Jackson is out. Steve Kerr is in. I know. I mean, at least I haven't had the opportunity to talk with you guys about it. Good move, bad move. What are you guys' thoughts, Sonny? I'll start off with you.
Well, I think it was a terrible move to get a hold of, or to let Mark Jackson go. I mean, that's the move I think is terrible. Now, the fact that they got Kerr there, I guess I don't understand, and maybe it's because I don't pay attention. But how did Steve Kerr all of a sudden become the best basketball coach prospect in the NBA? I'm not criticizing. I just don't understand how it happened. I mean, last year we weren't talking about Kerr. You know, maybe we were, and maybe I wasn't paying attention. But this year, all it is Steve Kerr, Steve Kerr. What, Steve Kerr's not taking the Laker job? You know, since when has – I mean, granted, I know he was a great – but am I missing something? I mean, tell me where Steve Kerr has been able to step in and take over a team. And last time I heard, he hasn't won a championship since he was a player with the Bulls.
Yeah, very true. I mean, he was a GM, and you know that, Sonny. He was the Phoenix Suns GM for a while.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, helped put those teams together that never won. So,
yeah.
You know, and you can blame that on coaching, I guess, if you really wanted to. But, yeah, I think you're right, though. I don't think he's won since he was here in Chicago.
Well, who hired him? I mean, Steve Kerr was in charge of that whole thing. Who hired him? So you got a guy who brings in coaches but doesn't bring in good coaches, but I guess he's good enough to coach? I mean, if he's not good enough to figure out who would be a good coach, what makes him think that he's going to be a good coach? I'm at a loss with it. Like I said, maybe I'm missing something here. Maybe, I mean, I know the guy knows basketball. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the guy knows basketball. I'd be dumb to say it. But how this guy ends up with a five-year, $25 million deal with Golden State is beyond me. I mean, I can name six or seven coaches that are not coaching right now that I would rather have than Steve Kerr. Now, whether or not he can make that connection with the young guy, that part I don't know. So I'll give it that. But, you know, there are many coaches out there that I would take probably before him.
So, Tarvin, you said it was a terrible move. I mean, what are your reasons for that? I mean, is it a lot similar to what Sonny was talking about, or do you have another reason?
I mean, I look at Mark Jackson, what he's done. I mean, well, they went 60 games this year or something. They made the playoffs, and they're a good little team. And like Sonny said, I wanted to say the exact same thing he said. Who in the hell made Steve Kerr the most sought-after head coach, you know, right now? I'm like, who in the hell is this guy? At least Mark Jackson, you know what you get. I think Mark Jackson's an elite head coach. I honestly do. I think he's tremendous. Steve Kerr hasn't done anything coaching, so why now? I mean, I don't know. Maybe he kisses Phil Jackson's ass good enough, or Phil speaks his name a lot. I don't know.
Well, you know what? Think about it, guys. Think about this. I want you to think about this. All right? When Mark Jackson got hired, didn't his name just kind of come out of nowhere, too? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I never had heard about Mark Jackson being a, you know, a top, you know, candidate or one of the hot assistant coaches that were out there that teams were trying to find. Mark Jackson's name just came out of nowhere. I mean, he went from being an ESPN analyst to all of a sudden he's a head coaching candidate. And it's like, well, where did that come from? So it kind of has the same feeling, does it not? So my point is maybe it might work out. You never know, but
That's a good point, because I'll be honest with you. If he got the job because of the job that he did at ESPN, Mark Jackson, as much as I respect the guy, listen, an analyst he is not, at least as far as being put on TV. I mean, the guy was the fact that he was actually an analyst on TV surprises me, because every time I heard him, I didn't necessarily understand him. I didn't think he was articulate enough to get a point across. Not that I am. I don't want to put that up. I don't want anybody to misconstrue. Mark Jackson is definitely a better analyst than Sonny Clark when it comes to the NBA. I don't want anyone to go that route. But as far as being able to deliver it the way that he delivered it on TV, it was horrible. I matter of fact, when that guy got on TV, I turned the channel. I didn't want to hear him. More than the fact that he didn't have that. Now, like I said, I think that, you know, when you look at Mark Jackson, I think the fact that he was able to make that connection, but I agree with you, Tarvin, where this guy ended up being as far as the coaching, you know, all of a sudden signing with Golden State, I think that was what, back in 2011, 2012, they put him on. The Golden State Warriors have improved, and you know what kind of reminds me is a coach that takes your team to the playoffs and getting fired. This reminds me of Vinny Del Negro all over again.
Yeah, who says Doc Rivers is a much better coach than Vinny Del Negro? I mean, hell, he won one more game, sonny.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I don't know. Maybe they could sell Doc Rivers a little bit better because of his name. I mean, really, you think about it, Vinny Del Negro is a badass, okay? I mean, how many championship rings does that dude have, okay? So, I mean, Vinny Del Negro, the Clippers coach, the first time he brings them to the – are you serious? And they let this guy – when I was talking to a friend of mine about this the other day, okay, we were talking about how does a guy like Vinny Del Negro, who takes this team to the playoffs that hadn't been there for years, how you dump him? You know, it made no sense. Now, granted, everybody wants to go further in the playoffs. I get it. I understand that. But you still got to get to the playoffs first. And, you know, Vinny Del Negro, I think he just got robbed big time. And I think I'm along the lines here with Mark Jackson. I think he probably got robbed pretty well there, too.
Right.
The Jackson, guys, I played it, I've coached it, I've officiated it, and I'm telling you, maybe there's some issues with upper management. Who cares? If he's producing on the court and those players play for him, then you have to accept what it is. I think we got a management problem in Golden State. I think that's what the problem is. It's not a coaching issue. It's a management issue.
Well, yeah, I think they pulled the trigger fast, too.
I don't think they were ever happy with him.
Why were they not happy with improvement? Like, that makes no sense. How are you not happy with your team improving?
I agree with you, but you got to understand this, but come on, let's be honest. I mean, they were expecting immediate results because that's what they want from their coach, okay? Like I said, I think he's been there since 2011, okay? So you're going there in 3 years, and he didn't get to where he needed to get to. And so they want to do it. Now, is starting over the answer? I never believe in that. If you're going in the right direction like the Warriors were, I mean, I'm saying keep Jackson on that team. But I think this came down to the fact that they had something in mind that they hoped that Mark Jackson could fill within a certain amount of time, and that time has come, and they said they drew a line in the sand that says, listen, we're either going to get to the conference championship or we're going to make a change at the head coaching position. I don't think there's really too much more logistics after that, and I think Mark Jackson was doomed when he wasn't able to fulfill that and get to the conference championship.
Maybe, Sammy. I'll tell you what in my opinion, what I think it was, and maybe I'm wrong. I don't know, but I think the reason that Mark Jackson is no longer the head coach, and this is all behind closed doors, things that maybe we haven't seen as, you know, just people watching, but you know, the reason that Mark Jackson is no longer the coach at Golden State, in my opinion, is the same reason guys like Mike Shanahan, John Gruden, and Bill Cowher didn't want the Dallas Cowboys job when they had the opportunity to get him. It's about being a yes man, and Mark Jackson is that type of person. He's not going to kiss your butt. He's not a yes man.
Right.
And I think behind closed doors, you know, Golden State wanted him to make certain changes, wanted him to do certain things a certain way, and he wasn't willing to do it. So they said, okay, fine. Well, I guess you're not going to be working here anymore. And Mark Jackson said, okay, good luck. Good luck, you know, finding a coach that's going to help your team continue to progress and get better. And, you know, that, I think that's what we have here, guys, is just the fact that Mark Jackson was not willing to be a yes man for the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, he told them, have a nice day. And, you know, they just went their ways.
It's interesting that you kind of bring that part up, because that goes the same thing with Vinny Del Negro. I mean, and I hate to make that comparison, but Vinny Del Negro, he didn't give a rat's ass what anybody was saying from the upper management. He was coaching his team. Okay, I mean, say what you. I mean, what was it? 43 years they were in existence, and then Vinny Del Negro puts them in a position where they win 56 games in a year. They had never done that as a franchise, and he goes in there. And not only that, how about 16-0 in December in that year? I'm just looking to say 16-0 in that stretch in December. And, you know, but then again, remember who we're dealing with as far as ownership there is for the Clips. So he's not known to do anything smart. So you got that going against him. So, the difference, I'm trying to figure out, you know, in reality, maybe that's it. Cuervo, you might be right. Maybe it's like, listen, I'm coaching this team. You guys do whatever the hell you guys want on the upper. I'm going to coach this team. You hired me to coach this team, not for me to let you talk in my ear and make decisions on how the franchise is going to be ran on the court when the game's being played. And I think sometimes owners get into that point, and you're right, Cuervo. I mean, Jerry Jones has been known to be in the ear of any coach that he had, and that, you know, exactly, and Gruden's not going there. I mean, you know, Cowher's not going to the Cowboys, and that might be the thing. And say what you want, I think Mark Jackson is going to be a coach in the NBA next year somewhere. Now, where that's going to be, I don't know. But if he isn't a coach this next year, he's going to be the year after. I mean, this guy's not going to be out of coaching for very long, at least I think. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't either. And, you know, Tarvin, what about Mark Jackson taking that L.A. Lakers job? You think that'd be a good fit?
No, because it looks like a step down for the Lakers. I mean, the Lakers want a big name, I think. And if they don't get an NBA-proven coach, they're going to go out and get Billy Donovan of Florida, Calipari of Kentucky, or Ollie of Connecticut. They're going to do it that way. If you take a Golden State coach that just left, it kind of sends a bad message to the Lakers that you'll settle for their scrap, their leftovers.
Right.
And I don't think that's what they have in mind to do.
Well, that's an interesting point that you say that, because when you look at the franchise itself as the Lakers, they're known for that name. I mean, when they go outside of grabbing that big name, that the team's just not successful. I mean, and that's just history as far as the Lakers are concerned. I mean, you can say what you want, but, you know, the coaching, when you look at the coaching resume for the Lakers, and I'm going to pull that up because I think I made my point, you know, coaches, I mean, the guys that have been successful in the past as far as coaching for the Lakers, I got it right here. All right, the names that come up on this, you know, Mike D'Antoni, nobody worth a nickel. I mean, Mike Brown, okay, didn't do anything. I mean, and these are not big names. As far as Rudy Tomjanovic, even though he won championship over there with Houston, he's still not that big name. And one of the names that really kind of comes to me, okay, is Kurt Rambis. Okay, can we get Kurt Rambis to do the job? You know, these big time college or these big time players don't make great coaches, but yet you get Del Harris, who takes them to the 94-95, he's the coach of the year, and you got Phil Jackson, and you got Pat Riley. Those are the other guys that you're talking about. Hell, even Magic Johnson was a joke as a coach. So in order for the Lakers to be successful, they've got to grab that name, I think. And I don't know if it's because the players relate to it better. They talk to the players and say, listen, I mean, when we bring in guys that are big name, like Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, you know, we win basketball, we win championships. And that goes with the pedigree of what the franchise is as a whole. When you think Lakers, you think Super Bowl. Okay, you think Steelers, you think Cowboys, you think successful NFL, and that's the same thing with the NBA. When you say Lakers, they are the team. So they need to go out and grab that. Mike D'Antoni, when they made that hire, if you listen, you go back and listen to my show, I said, that guy will be lucky to make it a year. He's not a big enough name. He's a good coach, but he's not a big enough name, and I don't think Mark Jackson is that guy that could step in there to the Lakers. He'd be lucky to make it a full year in Los Angeles.
You know what I find funny, though, guys, is, you know, we keep talking about big names and things like that, and when we think of big names, we think about the guys that you just mentioned, Sonny, Phil Jackson, mm-hmm. Pat Riley.
Yep.
Guys like
Who's
that.
Who's going to step in?
The problem I have with that is, you know, as a fan of the NBA or just as a person who is an analyst, you know, whatever, we have to realize that, look, these guys are old. Like, their coaching days are over. We need to start looking for the next big names. What if Mark Jackson is that guy? We will never know if he coached Golden State for 3 years, and now nobody wants to give him another chance. What if he's the next, you know, big-name coach? I don't know who to compare him to. I don't want to compare him to a guy with 11 championships or a Pat Riley, but what if he is the next, you know, George Karl of NBA coaching, a guy that is very successful, may not have won a ring yet, but, I mean, he gets you in the playoffs consistently and does a damn good job. And his coach and his players respect him. I mean, we're never going to know, though, if teams don't give this guy another shot. So, I mean, yes, it'd be great to bring Pat Riley and Phil Jackson back. Those guys don't want to coach anymore, Sonny. I mean, let's be real here.
I agree.
It's time to start,
the
finding a new name.
The bigger name teams want a proven commodity. Something that's going to ring with their fans. I know exactly what you're saying, but you have to pay your dues to get the Lakers job. You just don't get the Lakers job.
Carvin, come on. I mean, my God, the Lakers' job is garbage right now. That should be a starting job for a coach. I mean, hell, Steve
Kerr
should have
been
the Lakers'
job. But at the same time, the franchise is not going to let it be a starting job. Lakers management isn't going to let it be that way.
Then, you know, if that's the case, Sonny, then you know what? The Lakers are going to continue to win 20 games a season, miss the playoffs, and get lottery picks every single year. They think they're that big still. They're sadly mistaken because guess what? The Western Conference is loaded. The eighth seed Memphis Grizzlies would have been the 3 seed in the East, guys. Did we put that in perspective? I mean, the West is loaded.
It is. But look, hey, all right, let's just go through some of the names. I just pulled this up. Stan Van Gundy, okay, and his brother, Jeff Van Gundy. I mean, yeah, they're good coaches, but come on, I can't even imagine. Maybe Stan. Maybe Jeff looks like a turtle. I mean, you also got to be able to fit the part. You also got to be able to at least fit the part in L.A. Yeah, Jeff Van Gundy. He does. Stan Van Gundy looks like the Pillsbury Doughboy, and then Jeff Van Gundy looks like a turtle. He does. They don't fit the mold of the coach in L.A.
Stan Van Gundy reminds me of someone else who we probably shouldn't mention on the show, but. He's a guy in adult entertainment. Ron Jeremy, you damn right.
So he might fit over in L.A. Maybe I'm wrong. But, I mean, who else is out there? P.J. Carmesimo, he's going to be out there. Jerry Sloan, he's going to fall off the face of the earth. And George Carr, they're all old people. So what needs to happen, Cuervo, is maybe Steve Kerr has to be that guy to step up and be the next big thing. That's the problem. There are no coaches that are taking that step forward to be able to ink themselves in a position such as the Laker. We can sit here and speculate that all day long, but if you're not a big name, you're just not going to go to the Lakers. I just honestly believe that. I don't know if Kerr was a name that was really being considered in L.A. I wish the big dog was awake and we could talk to him about it, but man, I don't know, Cuervo. I mean, who's the next coach that could take that spot in L.A. and actually be successful out there? I just don't think of a lot of names that mix well as far as the Lakers are concerned. But I get your point that the Lakers, remember, how many games this year?
Yeah, the Lakers won like 23 games or something like that this year.
So anybody's going to be in the
pool up right now.
I don't care how good of a coach Bill Jackson was. He would have won maybe 25 games this year with these guys. They suck. I mean, you have to have talent on a team, but you don't want a bunch of has-beens trying to.
Yeah. All right, so guys, this is, and I'm going to put this in really interesting perspective. All right, they won 27 games this year, 27-55.
Wow.
Okay.
The worst in franchise history.
Absolutely. And by the way, they were the second worst team in the Western Conference behind the Utah Jazz, who won 25 games. So, yeah, that's pretty bad. Okay,
Funny thing, the Lakers and the Utah would have probably made the playoffs in the damn East. That have probably been good enough.
Right. Yeah. You know who would have made it, though? The Minnesota Timberwolves would have made it in the East.
Yeah. And by the way, there are reports Kevin Love wants out of there big time. He's going to be the big-time free agent this year.
Yeah, and you know where he wants to go? Either Golden State or right here in Chicago. So, Steve Kerr, let me tell you right now, I said it all along.
Dallas.
Steve Kerr made the right decision by taking the Golden State job. You know, when you have a choice between Golden State and the New York Knicks, yeah, the West is tougher. However, when you think about it, the Warriors are a much more established team. I mean, you got Steph Curry, you've got Thompson? You know, sharpshooters that you can build from. And, oh, by the way, Steve Kerr was a hell of a shooter himself, if I remember right, which I do fondly remember. So, I mean, it's just a better job. Yeah, it's a tougher conference out west, but, I mean, hell, when you're taking over a 51-win team, guys, I mean, and Golden State was stupid to let Mark Jackson go anyways, but that's besides the point. It's a done deal, And, you know, but, yeah, love, the rumor is Love wants to either become a Bull or a Golden State Warrior. So,
I'm going to tell you where he should go, and I agree with Tarvin. Tarvin in the background said it. Dallas needs to mortgage the camp to get him. In Dallas, if they're really serious about getting back in and being a actual contender, they need Kevin Love. And, you know, the wallet, the man wallet that is down here in Mark Cuban, he needs to open it up and give it to Kevin Love. That's where he needs to be as far as Dallas is concerned. I think that is the best move as far as that is. Dallas needs something because Dirk, I mean, he's got two more years, but he's not going to be your superstar. You need to start grooming somebody else, and that I think that could be Kevin Love. That's a good pick there, Tarvin.
Yeah, but, I mean, is Kevin Love going to be willing to become a Dallas Maverick? I mean, you could throw the money at him, but as, you know, we've seen in the past a couple times, guys, you know, sometimes guys don't care about the money. They just want to win.
Cuban's been saving up, guys. He hasn't made any splashes yet. He's waiting. You got to admit the free agent class has been shit, but he's waiting, and he's waiting patiently, and now you have a chance to maybe get Carmelo Anthony Love. Hell, you never know when he's going to pull off two big acquisitions and make a move.
I hope he doesn't get Carmelo Anthony.
But Cuervo was right, Sonny, when he said that if Kerr made the better decision, you're damn right he did. The Knicks are going to suck, and they're going to suck royally forever. I would hate to know I had to coach that piece of shit team. But at least going to Golden State, you know what you have. You have a youthful team. You have some chances to get some free agents, to draft some players. So he made the best move by going there, no doubt about it.
Well, and think about this. He was also only offered a Steve Kerr. I was just looking, if I remember correctly, they were talking about quote-unquote lowball from Phil Jackson, 3 years, $13 million or something like that. And look what he's getting going over to, you know, other, you know, going to Golden State. So Golden State, you know, evidently paid him the big-time coach money that I guess he deserves, I guess. I'm still confused about that. But here's the thing. If I'm not mistaken, I also read someplace else that they offered Kerr a five-year deal for $22 million. And that I'm just trying to figure, 4.4, I don't understand why it went back to a three-year deal. Something, there's a reason why Phil Jackson wants to win now, and Kerr, he wants to solidify that money in the bank. When that contract signs, he's going to get the money. So why not? He 5 years, 3 years, what's the difference? So I think you're right. Going to Golden State was the right move for him financially. Forget about the talent. I mean, in reality, financially, the guy's going to be set. I mean, he screwed up in Phoenix, and they played him a big bundle. He just got lucky and got another free agent payday in reality.
So how are the players going to play, guys? I mean, for Golden State, you look, the majority black players on Golden State, firing a black coach and hiring a white coach, how is that going to affect it? I mean, I know it's not politically correct to talk about some of this stuff, but it's very important that people don't talk about that needs to be. How are the players going to respond to this?
That's a good question.
Hey, you know what?
Hey,
honestly,
we got 4 minutes left in the show, or do we got 3 hours?
No, only 2 hours, so we got about 3.5 to go. I'm just going to make a real quick point, and it's going to, you know, I think it's a pretty good point. If I'm Steph Curry and all these other guys, I don't care what color Steve Kerr is, if he's black, white, purple, orange, green. Guess what? He played with the greatest of all time. I'm going to listen to what this guy tells me, and that's what comes down to.
Yeah, and but that same thing, you would have think the same thing for Kurt Rambis, and that guy couldn't get anybody to listen to him in Los Angeles or Minnesota. Yeah.
Well, that's because, ugly. You know, because they're idiots. He does look kind of nerdy, but...
Hey, if you need to extend this, you can. I mean, it'll go into to the archives. People that aren't called in now can't call in. I didn't know if you knew that, Cuervo, or not.
No, you know, I'm not
blog
talk savvy like Sonny and you guys are, but, I mean, I know it'll let us go past the time slot. It's just, I don't know how that all works, honestly. Sonny might have to log in and do it for me.
No, all you do is keep talking. That's all you do if y'all needed to. If you didn't want to, don't worry about it.
You can still go past. It'll go into archives. Just people who aren't listening live can't hear it, and the only way they can hear it is in archive.
Okay, understood. I mean, I don't know. I know you could go past the actual, like, time slot. It's just, I mean, I don't know if I had to do anything to make that happen, but.
No, it does it automatically.
But yeah, I mean,
but.
Okay, got it. So, I mean, but that's what I would do if, you know what I mean, Steve Kerr played with the greatest of all time, okay? I think I'm going to listen to a little bit of what he has to say. And, you know, he had some of the greatest coaching of all time. So Steve Kerr's probably a guy you should listen to.
I would think so. And another guy that comes to my mind, you know, when I think about coaching who wasn't successful, Magic Johnson, maybe he just wasn't a good coach, but Larry Bird comes to mind as well. Those, not really, they're great players, but they're really filling a role as a head coach. They didn't really do a great job of it. I don't know if it's because of player personnel or just the fact that they were ineffective coaches.
Where did Magic coach? I can't remember that, Sonny. I don't remember that.
He coached back for the Lakers, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Okay. Hell, I didn't remember that. Yeah, he's an idiot. Yeah, so's Larry Bird. That's why they fell.
But they were. But I will say, you know, he may be an idiot, but they are some of the best coaches. Our players out, you know, in their day. I mean, you know, obviously we just named off three names, and Kurt Rambis was a great, you know, bench player for the Lakers, but that guy couldn't get, I mean, in Los Angeles as well as Minnesota, I mean, he could not get people to listen to him. That's what it did boil down to as far as from everything I read about that. Moving into coaching here as far as the NBA is concerned, it makes you kind of wonder what moves are going to be made. Who's going to be that coach that's going to step up? Granted, you got to give him the shot. I mean, the Lakers got to hire someone, so it'll be really interesting to see who they make that pick on as far as who's going to coach the team in 2015.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, guys, I mean, I think going for the Lakers' sake, going for that big splash type name, it's not going to benefit them at all. They need to.
I don't think there is a big splash guy out there, really. I think that's another thing, though.
Unless they go to the college ranks, and you know, I mean, I know we hear it every year, but guys like, I know everybody talks about Coach K and things like that. I think if one of the college guys is going to come up and do it, it's going to be Tom Izzo from Michigan State. That's my opinion.
Yes. And when you mention Izzo, Coach K is going nowhere. All these people, they have to write for Bleacher Report. And Coach K, it will never go anywhere. This guy will never coach on the NBA level. Why? He doesn't have to. He doesn't have to, you know, cement his legacy. It's already there. Coach K doesn't need to go there. And not only that, he gets paid incredible bucks. And he doesn't have to prove that he can coach on the NBA level. He's provided many NBA players in his tenure there at Duke. So, you know, he doesn't have anything to prove. Now, Tom Izzo on a different point, younger guy, doesn't have that, you know, long-time longevity as a college coach. I think Izzo would be a great pick for that next big thing to head into the NBA. I don't know. Tarvin, I think he's about the only one, because he was on the tip of my tongue,
Tarvin,
you know, when we were talking
Tarvin's
about
got another
this.
Name in mind. I know exactly who Tarvin's going to talk about, and I think he'd be a great fit as well.
Well, Calipari.
Not Calipari.
You're talking about Donovan?
That's not what I was thinking. Yeah, Billy Donovan. I figured that's who you were going to talk about.
Well, I mean, he's all business. But I'll go back to Krzyzewski. He has coached in the NBA. He coached those Olympic teams, and I think he's done pretty good for himself, you know. But Sonny's right. Krzyzewski's already made his legacy. And I don't think he can make more money in the NBA than he would in college with all of his endorsements and things like that. I mean, he can name his salary. He is, when you think of Duke, you think of Mike Krzyzewski. So you can't leave that place. I mean, especially a big-time name like that. But
Calipari said he would leave if he could catch LeBron James, he said, in a heartbeat, but that's not going to happen. So I don't know. Billy Donovan,
oh,
to me, he made the move one time. Remember, he went to Orlando and then quit right off the bat and just said he made a bad decision. I don't see him going back. So I don't know who in the hell is out there.
Hey, go into a search on the Google, put in Coach K salary, and up at the top. I mean, it's the first one. Coach K is going to get a pay raise, and he's going to make $7.2 million to coach Duke. I mean, my God. I mean, 7.2? Is there any coach making 7.2 in the NBA? I don't think there is.
No.
Off the top of
no.
my head. It's not even close. I think it's 5.5. I think it's Curry. You got 5.5. I think he's the closest. And that's still 2.2 below
Coach
K.
And you don't have to deal with the egos, Sonny. I mean, he gets these guys this. They're in awe of him when they come out of high school. So he gets them for a couple of years, and they move on. In the NBA, I don't think they would listen to Coach K like that because they would think college every time they saw it.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
I agree.
A good point. I mean, you know, you can mold those guys to how you want to mold them, and you're not dealing with guys that are, you know, 30 years old and stubborn in their own ways of how to play basketball and things like that. So it's a much tougher adjustment to go from pros or from college to the NBA than a lot of people realize. It really is.
Hey,
because,
get this. Go ahead, Cuervo. I'm sorry.
No, I'm done, Sonny. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Coach K made $9.7 million in 2011. Okay? These are astronomical numbers. And that was total compensation. He had a salary base, but he got, like, bonuses and stuff, equaled $9.7 million to coach Duke. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, it's crazy enough to think that he's going to make 7.2. I mean, but that's the base salary. Never mind the bonuses and everything else that are going to push him up to close to $10 million to coach Duke. This guy ain't going nowhere. And here's the thing. He never should either.
Funny, he makes double of college, the lead of college football coaches. I mean, you know how big college football is. Mike Krzyzewski makes a lot more than Nick Saban does, which is surprising.
Yep. Yeah. So, to me, but you know, I mean, but when you think Duke, you don't think anything but basketball. You don't think about football. You don't think about anything else. In reality, you don't think about you think basketball. Duke. You know, Coach K is, you know, the Joe Paterno, you know, of football. But the fact of the matter is Coach K hasn't done anything stupid enough that Paterno did. You know, the longevity on a basketball team, I think, is hugely different than the long longevity of a basketball coach. Too many kids and, you know, I think there is a huge difference from coaching, you know, football. I mean, you got so many players on the team, and you're looking 15. I mean, one coach handling 15 players instead of 53. I mean, you know, you would think that the football coach would make more money, but I have a feeling that if we rank it and find out the salaries, I bet you basketball coaches, I mean, compared to their salaries, the big top names in the college area are making so much money compared to, you know, seeing how there's only 15 players on a team. It's amazing.
Yep, very, very true. So, but, all right, guys, anything else before we get off here today?
I didn't have anything else. The only thing I had that we didn't talk about was Robert Mathis as far as the suspended four games for PED. That was the news that I heard a lot about this week as far as what he's doing. And also, Jerry Rice's son, you know, with the Baltimore Ravens, He doesn't get drafted. He goes there in a free agency. Wow. I would think you got that pedigree. Someone's breaking their neck to get you, but it just goes to show, don't matter what your pedigree is, it's what you do out on the football field. But the Ravens are loving Jerry Rice Jr., something to keep your eye on. But, yeah, the big one, news was about Robert Mathis and the performance-enhancing drugs and stuff like that. And if I'm not mistaken, they were fertility drugs, and they were actually prescribed by a doctor, but he didn't get it approved. If I read the story right, and that's just off the top of my head, what are you hearing about that, Cuervo? Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, Sonny. We lost Tarvin, just to let you know, so it's going to be you and me to finish this thing out. Yeah, okay. That's exactly what it was. You know, he says he regrets not going to the NFL for not getting a double check. Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Okay, you got caught, whatever.
Well, didn't he have the prescription, though? In his case, didn't he have the prescription and he was at it seems a legit reason, more so than I'm taking fertility. I mean, I think they were actually, he had twins back in 2012, if I'm not mistaken, if I heard it right. One of the things is that he does have that low count. It's actually for, if I read it and heard it right, it's actually a legit reason, and he just didn't get it through the NFL. This guy just made I don't think he's doing it to actually – try to gain that advantage like some people do. They get caught doing this. This was actually a reason why he was doing it, because even though he's got two children, he wanted more children, and that at least it sounds legitimate, right, Cuervo? So I guess we always have to have the speculation in the back of our mind. Is it really legitimate that he's doing it?
Right, exactly. But, I mean, I'm trying to find out where it was. I mean, it has to do with him and his wife trying to conceive another child and things like that. Let's see. I'm trying to read what you were talking about as far as it being prescribed. Let's see. Yeah, and you know what? I don't see anything about that.
That was the only.
So,
man,
that was
the only. Maybe that could have been this. I mean, literally, I heard it in a flash, and I had to get out of the car. That's how fast it happened, and I never got a chance to check back up on it. I'm trying to find out what's going on as far as he is concerned. It's Robert Mathis. And by the way, I mean, that guy's a monster on the defensive side of the ball. When you think about what he brings to a defense, I don't know. I thought I had heard that he had a prescription for it, and that's what we'll try to see if we can find out. Really quick, failed the drug test, tried to find it, suspended 4 games, positive test. But I wanted to see if it was the drug in question is a fertility drug prescribed by his doctor. So
I think the problem that they're having with it, though, Sonny, is it's not FDA approved, so therefore it's not NFL approved, and I think that's where the problem lies.
I get it.
So
well,
that's what it's
all
coming down to.
Got it. So interesting situation. You know whether or not good, bad, or indifferent, I don't know, but you know. This guy, I don't think has been too much, and he's never really been in the news for this kind of stuff. There's always going to be this speculation in the back of your mind. Why didn't he tell him, if it's prescribed or if it's not? But if he's prescribed by a doctor, but it's not FDA approved, he probably would not have gotten the approval to use it, and probably would either said you can't use that, you have to do something else, or go and maybe tried the other ways, and this is the only thing that they're trying. It's a new drug that they're trying to get. I don't know. It's an interesting story. I'd love to. I'm going to see if I can find a little bit more about it and see why it happened. But that was one of the big news that came out of there. And by the way, just to let you know, from I don't know. We didn't touch on Andre Johnson. This was a guy that was actually being sought off as trade bait for a first-round draft pick by Houston. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, and I've heard the Kansas City Chiefs are a team that's interested in trying to pick this guy up, Sonny. So, I mean, imagine him and Dwayne Bowe together, you know, with a guy like Alex Smith and all the pieces that they have in Kansas City, Jamal Charles. So, I mean, do you think that'd be a good fit for Andre Johnson and for the Kansas City Chiefs?
Well, I think it'd be a good fit for Andre Johnson. I don't know about the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm going to just tell you straight out, Andre Johnson, he wants out. From what I'm hearing, this guy wants out. And the reason why he wants out, they didn't find that quarterback. Now, Grant, you know, defense has always been good in Houston, so I get his frustration. They didn't do anything as far as the quarterback position for this football team. So, and now, granted, would he have still wanted out of Houston? That part I don't know, but just logistics, looking at it at the top of it without knowing any of the information that was on top of it, if you're Andre Johnson, you want someone to throw you the damn ball, and they don't have that in Houston. I get what he's talking about, and I could get his frustration that he said, you know, hell with this. I mean, if you're not going to get me anybody to throw the football, first of all, you're affecting me as far as future is concerned. Second of all, I'm not going to get the ball. I want to go someplace where I'm a prime target for someone to throw the football for me to make some money. And I get where Andre, and I mean, granted, he's been in a franchise that has been mediocre at best, you know, for the longest time in the world. This guy wants to get in. Now, you know, when you got a guy who's been playing as long as he has and wants to go to a team to win a championship, you know, I get Andre Johnson's frustration. At Kansas City, yeah, I that's not the worst place to play, because as much as I like Dwayne Bowe, I've never really considered Dwayne Bowe a number one wide receiver on too many football teams. Now, granted, he's the number one guy in Kansas City. He'd be number one probably in a team, such as maybe, you look at Houston, or not Houston, you look at Tennessee, you look at Jacksonville, you know, Buffalo. I mean, he'd probably be number one in those counts, but, you know, but as
yeah,
far
exactly.
as if they brought in an Andre Johnson, he moves automatically to a number two wide receiver.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, you know, that's – give me 1 second, Sonny. Sorry. So, Mrs. Cuervo's
sure, no
phone was ringing. Yeah, Mrs. Cuervo's phone was ringing, so I had to go bring it to her. But, you know, honestly, like, doesn't it remind you, though, of a certain situation in Arizona where you kind of had the same thing where, you know, you have a wide receiver, outstanding wide receiver, who, you know, kind of expressed his frustration, maybe not as vocally, but it's, you know, same thing. You know, hey, if you can't find me
yep.
a quarterback, maybe it's time for me to move on. So I think
Larry
that's what we're getting here.
Never
going to
go out in the public eye and say that, yeah. It's a good point. Larry Fitzgerald is Arizona better do something. I mean, if you're going to depend on Carson Palmer next year to get you to the Super Bowl, I can understand. I would be able to. I don't care what kind of season that Carson Palmer is. I know they finished 10-6, but, you know, I just don't think of Carson Palmer as the guy that's going to get you there. I really don't. But here, I will take the step back and say I never thought Kurt Warner was the guy either. However, at least he made it to Super Bowls and won one with the Rams, so it made more sense. But when you're looking at Carson Palmer, the Arizona, I'm going to tell you, I'm disappointed in Arizona as far as what they did in the draft. I mean, they didn't go out. They needed them. I think this is a team that needed to make a splash at the quarterback position. I think they dropped the ball big time as far as what they did. Now, granted, they went 10-6, but Carson Palmer pulled them out of the fire, what, five times in the final minutes of games? How long can you expect him to do that? So, you know, It was one of the disappointments I've seen. Now, all the things I read is that the Cardinals had a great draft. I just think the fact that they missed on the quarterback position was a big thing for them.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I thought they were going to get a quarterback, but, you know, they had different things in mind. So, Carson Palmer is only going to be able to do perform at a certain level for so much longer before it's time to look in another direction. So, you know, I mean, for Cardinal fans' sake, I really hope that they have a plan in mind, because if they're just going to kind of see what happens and take that type of mentality and, you know, use that type of approach, it's not going to work out well at all for Cardinal fans and for the franchise. So
right.
I really hope they have a plan in mind, because if not, Sonny,
well,
then...
You know, the only problem I think when I see Arizona, I mean, granted, they got some good players. I don't want to say that the players that they got in the draft are not good, but when you're the Cardinals, you got to think about what's going to happen in the next 2 years. And it's the most important position out on the football field. And I just think they completely and utterly dropped the ball when it came to that point. And, you know, again, going back to what they did in the draft, I don't think they had a horrible draft. I don't want anybody to think that that's what I think, because I don't think they had a horrible draft. But you, when you think about the Arizona Cardinals, the last time that they were any good, remember, they had a Hall of Fame-type quarterback at the quarterback position. And I'm sorry, Carson Palmer is not that guy. I mean, this guy's not going to make the Hall of Fame. So that being said, you need to bring someone in there that's able to do so. And I'm sorry, I guess I'm very speculative about what they're going to do at the quarterback position. Maybe they got a plan and they're just not releasing that out there. But if they don't go quarterback or do something about the quarterback position here, at least in this offseason or next year in the draft, I mean, Larry Fitzgerald, I feel so sorry for that guy. I mean, you know, talk about a guy who's been a team player for how many years in Arizona? I mean, when you are the wide receiver, number one wide receiver for an NFL franchise, and you got Tony Case throwing you the ball, or not Max whatever, I can't remember. But, my God, you got to be known as a patient dude. And, you know, sooner or later, that patience is going to run out. It's not about the money now with Larry Fitzgerald. He's got all the money in the world from Arizona. Now, you know, sooner or later, this guy's going to pick up a move and want to go try to win it. And hey, now I'll tell you, a team, we were talking about the Patriots. There's another team that would probably, I think it would be good, that got rid of a former Arizona Cardinal, and I'm talking about the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, hook him up in Baltimore. That might have dollar signs written all over it.
So are you talking about Fitzgerald going to Baltimore?
Yeah, why not? Why not? Mm, I mean, depending on how you feel about Flacco, I mean, you talk about a franchise quarterback. You know, you get it in Flacco. You got a well-ran organization over there that wants to win, obviously, right, Cuervo? You think about the Arizona Cardinals, you don't think about them wanting to win, because they haven't really made any steps in order to do so, except maybe keeping Larry Fitzgerald. So when you think about the Baltimore Ravens, this is a franchise that is known to want to win. And when there's a different, when you got franchises that want to win compared to franchises that are all about business, okay, it stands out. Baltimore wants to win. And now, granted, don't get me wrong, there's business involved with it, okay? But look what they did. They signed that franchise quarterback. They're willing to spend money. They're willing to take that chance to grab up what they need in order to get the quality that they need in order to win, more so as the Cardinals say, well, we'll grab up a guy that can fill a hole. And that's the difference between those two franchises, at least in my personal opinion, and based upon the history of the Arizona Cardinals compared to the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, well, and they just make smarter moves, Sonny. I mean, you look at the GM,
yep.
Ozzie Newsome. Thank you. Yeah, he's a smart GM who makes the right choices at all times. So, I mean, you know, I mean, I hate to say that about the Arizona Cardinals, and that they're not a smart organization, but they just don't. Yeah, that's what it basically comes down to.
Don't.
So,
And that comes down to a more of a business model more so than what are you going to do in order to win. And Ozzie Newsome, he knows he needs the franchise quarterback. Hey, Ozzie Newsome isn't stupid. He knows he overpaid for Flacco. But, my God, who else are you going to get? And Flacco probably would have got that money someplace else. So he might as well just stay right there in Baltimore. And not only that, I mean, you know, five trips to the playoffs, they didn't make it this past year, did they?
The Ravens did.
So this is the first year. So in 6 years, they made it to the playoffs five times, the first 5 years with Flacco. You got to pay the man. And, you know, and if they don't do it, someone else was willing to throw that money. So, you know, as much as we all think it was a dumb mistake, and to a certain extent, I get the point, but really Ozzie Newsome was like, listen, the number one position on a football field, I don't care if we're known as a defensive football team, is the quarterback. We will get that defense sooner than later in reality. But if we don't have a number one style quarterback on this football team, we're not going to win. And I applaud Newsome for what he's doing. He paid a lot for Joe Flacco. Did he earn his money last year? Obviously not. But really, going into 2015, compared to a lot of quarterbacks that are out there, you want to start with a rookie, or, you know, who else are you going to get? And that's what the Dallas Cowboys have got going on down in Dallas. If you get rid of Tony Romo, who really realistically is going to go in there and fit the prototype to a quarterback position? I can't think of too many people that are available that can fill the mold. You can say what you want about Tony Romo. At least he's got all the records. I mean, granted, they don't have all the wins, but the guy puts up numbers. And really, at the quarterback position, you want some guys that can put up some numbers. And I think they'll deal with not putting up numbers or not winning as long as they're putting up numbers. And, they're, you know, obviously he can throw the football. Obviously he can break records. Now we got to get him to the point where he now wins football games. And that's where they are in Dallas. And I don't know if they'll ever get that with Tony Romo, but really, realistically, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, who else are you going to go after unless you're going to draft somebody?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly, Sonny. I mean, and you know, I mean, it seems like the Cowboys are happy with Tony Romo. I mean, you have to be because you have to be, exactly. He wrote the drunk check as you mentioned before, so
yep.
He's got to stick with him.
You got to. And never mind that. If Tony Romo was available on the market right now, how many teams would actually pay the money that he's got due coming? I don't know. Yeah, and they wouldn't be championship teams. They'd be teams that were desperate for a quarterback. And then imagine Tony Romo on a bad football team, even worse than the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm not saying that, you know, at least they're finishing 8-8, but there are a lot of teams out there that in the last 2 to 3 years that haven't finished 8-8. So, you know, imagine him on a bad football team or a worse team, maybe say this, an even worse team than the Dallas Cowboys are.
Exactly. And, I mean, you know, people to criticize Romo now, I mean, I can only imagine how bad they would bash him in a Jaguars uniform or in a even a Tampa Bay Buccaneers uniform. I mean, they're not the greatest team either,
yep.
So, you know.
Well, and look at what Dallas did. What has Dallas done for the last 3 years? All they do is draft offensive linemen to protect the number one position out on the football field that is set. Tony Romo is your guy. Last 3 years, they get offensive linemen. I'm sorry. Jerry Jones may have been criticized for not making that big splash, but it was the right move. And, you know, last 3 years, offensive linemen to protect your number one commodity, and that's Tony Romo. Whether it's last year it was Fredericks at the center position, Tyron Smith before that, and this year they grab up that offensive lineman. They are molding the Dallas Cowboys of what you've seen. Because let's be honest, one of the biggest things in sports history I'm pissed off about is Emmitt Smith having the rushing record. okay? And the reason why he's got the rushing record is because of that offensive line. As much as I want to try to criticize Jerry Jones for that pick, it was the right pick for the Dallas Cowboys. You can't even – you can talk about Johnny Manziel in the Dallas Cowboy uniform, but Johnny Manziel is in your Dallas Cowboy quarterback. And everybody heard that that was going to happen. In my mind, I knew it never would happen. He doesn't fit the mold of what Dallas is all about anyway.
I mean, true, Sonny. However, I mean, when the Cowboys drafted Dez Bryant, I mean, did he fit the mold of the Cowboys, what they wanted either? I mean,
they've been known to have that problem child at the wide receiver position, so it doesn't hurt them. If you look back at the quarterback position for the Dallas Cowboys, all you got is stand up guys. Right, you know Roger Staubach. I mean, you know Danny White. Tony Romo, even to a point, is a stand-up guy. I mean, these are not guys that give you problems. You don't have to worry about Roger Staubach. You don't have to worry about Troy Aikman. You draft Johnny Manziel, you actually got to worry about him at the quarterback position. Now, the wide receivers, the Dallas Cowboys have been known to have problem childs at the wide receiver position. So if it was a wide receiver, it wouldn't mean anything. And that's why Dez Bryant actually fits the mold of what the Dallas Cowboys are.
Yeah, and not only that, Sonny, but I remember the conversations about how, you know, Jerry Jones regretted passing up on a guy like Randy Moss. And he didn't want that to happen again where he passed up on a great talent. And, I mean, say what you want. I mean, so far it's been working out really well for the Dallas Cowboys.
Hey,
say what you want. Dez Bryant is one of the best in the game right now. He really
absolutely.
Is.
Absolutely. No question. You may hate him as a punk, and I'm there. This guy's a punk, without question. But, hey. You deal with certain things at that kind of position. I mean, all you got to do, if you get the opportunity, Cuervo, I want you to, and it takes some time, but it happens within the first five chapters of Boys Will Be Boys, okay? Jeff Perlman's book. Read about what bullshit that the Dallas Cowboys had to deal with when they had Michael Irvin as a wide receiver on this football team. You know, unless you read the book, you don't necessarily know about Michael Irvin stabbing a barber or a rookie because he wanted to get his hair cut before the rookie, okay? Did anybody necessarily know that off the top of your head? Did you necessarily know that off the top of your head? No. But
not.
that's a mold of a wide receiver in Dallas, okay? So then going that mold as far as the talent at the wide receiver position where, let's be honest, you don't have to be the smartest cookie in the bunch to be a wide receiver. You have to be smart to be a quarterback, but a wide receiver, you need athletic ability. So they didn't go after Michael Irvin because he was smart. They didn't go after, you know, Dez Bryant because he was smart. They went after Troy Aikman, Roger Staubach, Danny White because why? They were smart. And I'm sorry, I hate to even just make it plain, but that's what it is. And that's what the Dallas Cowboys are. They'll get you the thug, but their quarterback is not going to be a thug. And the one that time they tried to do it with Quincy Carter, that thug is gone. Okay, so, you know, I don't – hold on, thug. Punk, because I don't want anybody to think it doesn't matter. No punks at the quarterback position, but you can be a punk and be a wide receiver in Dallas.
Right. Right, at certain spots, certain positions, it's okay to be a punk and things like that. But,
absolutely.
You know, when it comes to being a quarterback, you know, it is true, though. I mean, you know, you got to have a smart quarterback, so it's a very good point.
It fits the mold. It fits the mold, and you can look at that on a lot of football teams in the NFL, and it's the same on a lot of football teams, and even to a certain point, successful football teams. And Randy Moss is a name that comes to mind, right? I mean, you look at the Patriots, you'll go with the Randy Moss punk that he is, but Tom Brady, that guy's not a punk, and you're not going to have a punk at the quarterback position in New England. You know, and now would Larry Fitzgerald, getting back to him, you wouldn't have a punk at the wide receiver position. He'd break the mold. So that's why I always thought when you brought that up, that would be a perfect fit because you don't have two punks you have 100% class acts with them throwing the football and receiving it compared to only 50% where you have a class act at the quarterback position and a punk at the wide receiver. But which, by the way, I think the fact that Super Bowls, and I don't know how much time you have, but everybody talks about Tom Brady being the golden child of a quarterback position. I'm going to just put it out there. Tom Brady isn't the nicest guy in the world, okay? I'm going to tell you straight out, Tom Brady is more like Bill Belichick, more so than the nice guy. And Bill Belichick is not a nice guy. But I think his fact that he's not considered a quote-unquote nice guy is because of the passion of the game. You want to talk about a guy that'll throw around the F-bomb. I mean, all you got to do is watch Tom Brady on the sideline where they don't have audio. I'm sorry, everybody knows, the F word when it's being muttered or being yelled and you can see it. Tom Brady is not the golden child. However, he's won Super Bowl, so he's got that title, right? But in reality, this guy, it just goes to show when you win, what your image can be, probably more so than anybody else, because I think if you had Tom Brady on a different team that wasn't winning, I think that attitude probably can be considered a negative for a team more so than him. Because if you're not winning, what did Bull Durham, if you remember Bull Durham, Crash Davis said, if you win 20 in the show, you can let a fungus grow on your shower shoes, but until then you're just a slob. Same thing if right. Tom Brady was on a different team that wasn't winning. I mean, let him go crazy. Let him throw the F-bombs all over the place. But if he was on a different team that didn't win all the time, that would be looked at as a negative. So it's all about perspective.
Yeah, that's a good point. When we think of Tom Brady, great player, this and that, and probably very
class act,
off the field. That,
married to a beautiful woman.
Right. But yeah, you catch them on NFL films, and it's every other word. So
yeah, exactly. So it's all about winning.
Yeah, or Sonny, he's trying to high five his teammates, and they're just blowing him off. I don't know if you've ever seen that before, but that's actually happened a few times where.
Yeah,
he's going to high five his teammates, and they're just like, yeah, whatever, dude. That's Tom Brady that you're balling off. Do you guys realize that? But, obviously his teammates.
But
it's
funny that you mentioned that. I mean, hey, can I ask you a question? And maybe it's just because I haven't seen. Has Bill Belichick ever high-fived anybody ever?
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and say that. I've never
seen
that happen.
You would think you would have. I've never seen it happen, but, I mean, God, I can't. Bill Belichick, not high-fiving. I don't know if he does or not. I've never seen it, so let me just put that out. It may have happened, but I'm going to tell you, Sonny Clark has watched enough Patriot games. I've never seen him high-five anybody. It's amazing. It's just the different type of mentality that's out on the football field. Guys high-fiving everybody. When you mentioned that, you mentioned that in a show about how that's not the first time you mentioned about, Tom Brady being blown off on a high five. And I remember when you were talking in that show, I was thinking at the time that, man, I don't think Bill Belichick ever gave anybody a high five unless it was in practice. I've definitely never seen it out on the football field in an NFL game. I've never seen it. So it'd be interesting. Does Bill Belichick high five? That'd be interesting. So now I'm going to have to go looking for that.
Yeah, that'd be some good film to have. Some good YouTube videos to post, but
I might find it on YouTube. Hell, everything. Hey, I fixed my air conditioner the other day because of a little tip on YouTube. So maybe it is on YouTube. By the way, the Arizona Cardinals, just to let you know, they signed Kareem Martin to rookie contracts. Hold on, wasn't one of these guys a quarterback? I'm trying to look here. Linebacker Kareem Martin. So he is a linebacker. But didn't the Cardinals grab a quarterback, whether it was in the draft or whether it was in, let's see here. No, it wasn't. Did they even draft a quarterback? I got to find out. Now that's bothering me. Arizona Cardinals.
I don't think so, Sonny.
Quarterback. I don't think they did, unless it was an unsigned, unless it was an unsigned draft pick.
That's
the only thing. Huh?
Yes, it did.
Logan
Thomas. It was an undrafted.
There it is. Logan Thomas.
Virginia Tech. Yeah, Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, that's right. I remember. Now I know.
I just looked it up because I was like, if the Arizona Cardinals didn't at least do something, you know, to try to improve that position. So I don't know. I don't know anything about it. Is he any good? Logan Thomas, is he any good?
He's,
you know about him.
He's okay. He's average.
He's okay.
At best.
He's
okay.
If
he came
you
from
had to
Virginia
compare
Tech.
Compare him to somebody Michael Vick?
If I had to, no, not even close. I would say he's probably kind of like a see, I don't want to say Russell Wilson because he won a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He is kind of a shorter.
I see the prototype that you're trying to put him into, though. I see what so does
kind
he
of
kind
a shorter
of
mobile
the prototype
guy.
Of what he is?
Of Russell Rapp, for what Russell Wilson is, absolutely. I mean, shorter, mobile guy, got a decent arm, you know, nothing special, nothing right home to mama about it, you say.
Right.
So I don't know. I guess he's not as talented as Russell Wilson, but same type of quarterback.
I'm looking at the stats on him: 6'6", 250.
Wilson.
Is Russell Wilson 6'6"?
No, that's what I'm saying. He's a taller Russell Wilson. He's like
I was going to say, I think I stand nose to nose to that guy, I think, you know. So definitely a taller guy, seeing over the defense and stuff like that, that's a huge thing. You know, I don't know. They're going to have to – Arizona Cardinals have to do something, and I don't know. I hate to say this because, you know, I love indoor football and everything else, and I love you need that prototypical quarterback, you know. I'm not a big believer on the new guys that are coming in. Now, granted, Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl. I think it could happen, but man, if you go back and look at the history of Super Bowl wins, you know they got quarterbacks that are that a traditional quarterback. So let's see if Russell Wilson can break that mold, right? I guess as far as the new NFL, because we go back to the fact that they didn't even draft a running back till pick number 56, I think it was. Okay, so remember when the game was all about the running back position? You know, and now it's changed so much. The running back is an afterthought. I mean, they definitely don't worry about that. There's just so many Adrian Petersons out there right now, as far as running backs are concerned.
I guess so. I don't know.
The NFL don't think too highly of running backs. I mean, the last one that really, the one in Green Bay, and he came out of Alabama, I think it was Lacey. I mean, and, you know, really, if you think about it, outside of Adrian Peterson, you know, as far as running back position, I mean, really, who made a splash last year? Off the top of my head, I can't even think of anybody who really, quote, unquote, made the splash at the running back position.
I'm talking about from last year's draft?
Well, no, just last year in general. Running the football in the NFL, I mean, was there anybody that made any great big splash? I'm pulling it up right now. I'm on ESPN, the stats for running backs, and let's see what it draws up here as it's pulling it up. Every time I go to ESPN, it takes long to load, longest load than anybody. All right, here we go. All right, as far as yards are concerned, LeSean McCoy, which, God, I can't believe I forgot about him. LeSean McCoy was there. Matt Forte, Jamal Charles, and Adrian Peterson.
Jamal Charles,
I was going to say Jamal Charles
really made a splash just because of the injuries that he's gone through recently. You know, and for him to come back the way he did, to me that was the bigger splash of last year, more than LeSean McCoy, because we all kind of expected it to happen. But I think Charles surprised a lot of people.
And I'm still the believer. I've been busted. I'm just not a believer in Marshawn Lynch. Everybody loves him. I'm just not. 1,200 yards, 12 touchdowns. I get it. That's not just respectful. That's wonderful. There's something about Marshawn Lynch that tells me that this is not the guy that moves forward. But remember, in the past, we talked about Frank Gore, being a good running back. He dropped the number 9 on this list that I'm looking at. Reggie Bush is 13, but Reggie Bush definitely has changed his position. He's not all about the running back position. They want to put him in and out of there. But really, when you look at there's really 5 good running backs in the NFL right now, possibly 6 if you want to count Chris Johnson, who went up to, he went to New York, if you want to count him. Maurice Jones-Drew, playing for the Jaguars, of course, he didn't want to play there. 5 touchdowns, 803 yards, last year, dropped to number 20. But I'm just seeing a demise of the running back in the NFL. There's the guy. This is when I was talking about quarterback, Rashard Mendenhall.
Mendenhall.
Really?
I'm
seriously?
Sorry, go ahead.
I'm not that you're laughing, but God, everybody thought this guy was a good guy. There's just no really good top talent. Didn't he just get picked up? No, he did retire. You're right. He just did retire.
Yeah,
he played for the Cardinals, and that's what.
Yeah, he played six or 7 years, and he was done.
And the average running back is 3. If you average them all, Arian Foster got hurt, so I guess that was one of the problems for him as far as but Arian Foster, when you think about it, Arian Foster, LeSean McCoy, Matt Forte to a certain point, I think they're utilizing him a lot in the passing game, which is good for him in reality. But Jamal Charles, Alfred Morris, when he was dependent upon being the running back, he showed up pretty well, I thought. There it is, Morris. 7 touchdowns, 1,200 yards. But really, you don't have that great big name going out there. 1,200 yards is becoming the average. That's why I said, if you're a 1,000-yard rusher, you could be a Reggie Bush. You can be a Frank Gore, an Eddie Lacy. But really, Eddie Lacy, you have Aaron Rodgers. They're throwing the football. I think if he was on a different team, he might have had a chance to be more productive. So I think you got to kind of maybe give it to Eddie Lacy. But really, there are 32 teams in the NFL, and really, at best, there's 10 that are good. And the rest of them are just space fillers in the NFL on the other 32 teams.
Yeah, good. That's true, Sonny. But that tells you, though, the running game. Look who made it to the Super Bowl. Teams that weren't known for their running game. I'm sorry. The Denver Broncos had one of the greatest offenses because of the passing game and Peyton Manning, who broke the majority of the passing records. And then, in Seattle, they were statistically okay. I'm going to say this very carefully, but statistically, that Seahawks defense was the best we've seen since the 85 Bears. Those are the reasons that those two teams
made it. Maybe the Ravens in 2001.
I'm not a fan of that defense. Were they good? Yes. But
they won Super Bowl for them.
Yeah, and I wouldn't know because that's the one Super Bowl in the past, I would say 16. The past 20 years that I've missed. Past 20 years that I've missed. I missed that Super Bowl, because I was busy getting yelled at by drill instructors. But,
that's the
one Super Bowl that I missed.
But if you get an opportunity, watch it, because I will tell you that defense won. And so really when you think defenses, you think of three. You think of the Chicago Bears, definitely. You think of the Steel Curtain, winning games, notwithstanding what they have on the offensive side of the ball. I respect Terry Bradshaw for what he did, but Terry Bradshaw, in reality – you know, was kind of pedestrian if you think about it. You know, he had some great numbers for the time of the years that he played, but really when you think about Steeler football during that time, yes, I think people think more about the Steel Curtain defense more so than Terry Bradshaw, although he was great. I don't want people to think that, but I just think people more in Terry Bradshaw gets, you know, shadowed by the defense that they had on that football team, and that's yet when you look at, you know, the Seattle Seahawks, they just were a very even team, but definitely their defense was the powerhouse of that football team.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, can you make the same argument about Eli Manning's two titles? I mean, those New York Giants defenses were pretty damn good that he was able to win a Super Bowl with. So,
And if it wasn't for Mario Manningham catching that ball on his head, or is it Manningham, or who was it who caught the ball? Maybe it was Victor Cruz caught the ball on his helmet.
That was the second one. That was the second one where he had that tiptoe out of bounds catch. The first one was David Tyree, the one with the gum.
Tyree, that's it. Thank you very much. That one was Tyree. So, yep, you're absolutely right. I mean, boy, oh boy, this was good, even though I might even go and download it off that and put it up as a show. This was good. I mean, I love talking philosophically when it comes to football sometimes, because you take all of the athletes and think about football. And, you know, we could do a three-hour show almost every single week on football if we decide to do so. And that just goes to show, you know, the popularity and how people like to break it down. The head coach here at the Texas Revolution, Chris Williams, is funny. He wasn't talking about me directly because he was talking to someone who thought he knew it all. He says, but everybody's a football analyst. But boy, oh boy, I love to get outside the analyzing up on as far as quote-unquote analysts or quote-unquote NFL people and just get it to regular people and hear what they say, because as much as I think I know about football, I don't know as much as any analysts out there, but I love to hear those opinions, and that's why I've always liked Blog Talk Radio. They got their problems, but like I said, I listen to about five shows on Blog Talk Radio as far as sports are concerned. And it's because we're here something totally different than what you're going to hear from ESPN, Fox, CBS, or the NFL channel, or whatever the case may be. They still got to go politically correct, and they got to follow that because it's an agenda that they've got to follow, because they got to be known as pure. And, you know, they don't want to bring up that controversial issue of the woman walking in the locker room and how many men would stare compared to, you know, men in the locker room with. That was great. That's so valid. Drives me nuts. Good point.
Well, I mean, that's how we bring it here, Sonny. So, anything else you want to cover before we head on out?
No, good stuff today. I mean, I'm glad we were able to get 3 hours, and I was actually able to sit down for 3 hours. I've been busy like a chicken without a head, and, you know, whether it's business and sports and, you know, calling games and stuff like that, I was actually able to sit down and talk some sports. It was nice.
Yeah, me too, Sonny. I mean, it's been a long week, and, I missed last week's show. I had to work last week as well, but it was good to sit down for a little while and talk with you guys. We lost Tarvin a while ago, but, Sonny, I mean, it was good to catching up and, you know, talking some sports, and but I'm going to head out. I've got some visitors coming. We're all going to watch game one of the Blackhawks versus the LA Kings Western Conference NHL. So it's going to be
a good day. You betcha. Go out and enjoy it, and we'll talk to you next time, my friend.
Alrighty, Sonny. Yeah, I was hoping for the Ducks to win, but it didn't happen. all right, Sonny, you take care, and we'll talk to you soon. So everyone have a good day. That's going to do it for us, though. So appreciate everybody listening, and we're gonna sign off here. We've gone about 50 minutes over the allowed time. So for Sonny, for Tarvin, and for everybody in the NDB Media family, everybody over at the Couch Potato Sports Show, this is Cuervo signing off. Everybody have a good day.